Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, June 14, 2011, Carver Board of Aldermen public hearing and work session. We're going to take the agenda slightly out of the printed order, for which I apologize to those who may be here for the public hearings, but there are a couple of quick things that we're going to take care of first that I know there are a bunch of people who are here for. First and foremost, we are paying our bond attorney to be here by the hour, probably by the quarter, hour, actually. So I don't know what rate, but off the top of my head. But anyway, we're going to begin with item B1, unless there's an objection. Request to approve a resolution for issuance of $2.59 million. Sidewalk bond anticipation notes, Mr. Manager.
We don't have a presentation. This is a continuation at the same level as the board had authorized the last time for the bond anticipation notes. Bob Jessup, our bond counsel, is here, and of course, Arch McAdoo, our finance director, is also here if the board has any questions.
Are there any questions for the counsel? Yes.
I don't know if it's for counsel or for staff. When do we anticipate actually issuing the bond?
I would suspect, Joel, that will probably be sometime in 2013. We're so far along now with having issued consecutive bond anticipation notes that I think at this point it wouldn't make much sense to convert those notes into permanent financing because there's not insignificant issuance costs associated with a permanent financing. So I think the plan now, unless you all would see it differently, would be to issue the up to the $4.6 million in general obligation bonds towards the end of the authorization period, which is November of 2013.
Move the resolution.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Thank you.
All right, that's less than 15 minutes, Bob. I'm going to check your bill.
It's all flat fee bill, Mark.
Oh. Oh, shoot. Well, I should have made you go last. All right. Thanks, Bob. Bob Jessup, our bond attorney. Our excellent bond attorney. All right, and then the other item real quick is a presentation of the 2011-2012 recommendations of Human Services Advisory Commission. Budget allocations,
okay.
Mr. Manager.
There also is no presentation. Audrey Layden, the chair of the commission, is here. If she has any comments, I know she'll be happy to answer any questions. Annette Stone would be here tonight, but she's at the Bally Conference, so she's not able to be here.
Question mark?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, Audrey, I have a quick question on the list of different agencies that submitted requests. One says middle school after school, but it's not clear to me which group that is, what group that is.
Okay, middle school after school.
Yeah, it's on the second page of attachment B. It's the fifth one down. I'm sorry, the fourth one down.
Okay, you know, right now, since all I've got is what you've got, I don't remember which one that is either.
Is it Annette here in the room?
She's at
the Bally Conference.
Right,
you said that.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Well, I see it's someone that we budgeted $7,000 for this last year, and
right,
recommended giving that same amount to again. I just wondered which group it was. It wasn't clear to me from this. So,
well, we can check on that and get that to you easily enough.
Okay.
I left all my stack at home.
Okay.
Okay. I would like to raised something for the board to consider. There are some organizations that don't actually receive money from the town, and I'd like us to consider for the future in-kind donations. And I'm thinking specifically, for example, the community garden and its need for leaf drop-off. If we could maybe consider that as a way that the town may be, I mean, the town's already supported by allowing it to be on the property, obviously. But it would be very useful to facilitate the building of the soil so that things could be better grown there. And I know that there are a couple of other community gardens that are on town property. It would be a nice way to support. And I've heard from Public Works that one reason they don't like to do that is because they don't do it for residences, and so they feel that it would...
It's an equal treatment issue.
Equal treatment, but I feel that this is a community organization and public property, and so maybe that wouldn't necessarily apply.
Well, why don't we refer it to staff and have a report back with all the ramifications and costs.
And let me, can I follow up to that point just very quick, Sammy? Because I noticed, I also asked, and Kathy got it for us, I wanted to see the county. They were considering their outside agency funding as well over the last week or so. And I wanted to see who all they were awarding money to, because I've noticed in years past sometimes there's a correlation between the two. And their chart is set up in a way that I like the way it's set up. It's but anyway, one point about it that I want to say is they do have a couple of groups listed here that they support on an in-kind basis. So okay, kind of supports what you're saying.
All right, so there's a motion to refer that issue to the town staff. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Is there any other, is there a motion?
Yeah, just going to move to approve the
okay.
Items.
Is there a second?
Second. Yeah, I'm not going to vote for this. I would like us to make a modification. I spoke to Audrey last night about why IFC is receiving a 40% reduction from what we gave them last year in a budget where, I mean, that's really an extreme reduction. And she explained to me that they wanted to give money to some of the new applicants, and they thought IFC could spare it. And I am very much sympathetic with that sentiment in terms of supporting more organizations, but I'm not in agreement with doing it in this manner. And I feel like there are three reasons that I want to give the same level of funding to IFC. One is that IFC is critically important to this community. They just provide so many different services. The second is they're continuing to take on more work, more support kinds of things, more clients in the current economy. And the third and minor among them is the fact that they are based here in Carrboro. So I thought a lot about how to restore that funding without having to get into a whole discussion of different organizations and that sort of thing, which I really don't want to do. And let me add that, you know, in six budgets, this is the only time I've had a concern about one of the committee's recommendations. So my suggestion would be, since this was taken out to target the, I think it's seven new applicants that are included, I would like to remove that $3,500 proportionately from the new recipients and restore that to IFC. And the total of the new funding is about $11,500. So $3,500 is approximately 30% of that. So that would mean lowering that funding roughly 30%. Staff would have to figure out the exact amount, and then restoring IFC to their current fiscal year level.
So, Jackie, Joel, and Lydia.
I'll defer to Joel.
How much is in the contingency fund?
Well, if you're talking about next year,
yeah,
because this is $15,000,
right.
I would really caution against starting off before the new year even starts with it such a small amount.
Right. Yeah. That would be like 20%.
Sure. I think this is a committee of people who have gone over this with a fine-tooth comb and have tried to make it a balance. And so I'm not going to withdraw or form in my motion.
Okay.
Your second is still there?
Yeah. excuse me. I'm going to support what Dan is proposing, and the reason is, again, I studied these county requests a lot, and I've noticed a pattern the last couple of years where they seem to fund our Carrboro nonprofits that we also put our money behind as well. And I noticed IFC this year with the county, They last year with the county, they got $36,000. This year, they requested $50,000, and the manager, the county manager, recommends they get $41,000. So they're, the county manager is recommending a pretty significant increase to IFC, and I'm afraid if we decrease what we're giving, that might end up hitting them in the pocket with the county. So that's a reason I'm going to agree with Dan's reason.
I said it was going to be quick, but I was wrong. Go ahead.
Whoever's
you're next.
You are.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I support what Dan's saying because I'm concerned that pulling back from organizations that we've previously funded sends the wrong message. We really have worked very hard to continue support at the same levels. And that's been our mantra, and I really would like to see us do that before taking on new organizations at a higher level than an entry level should be.
You go ahead, then I'll go up to you.
If you look at some of the programs that are new, they're programs that are coming out of a real need. We're looking at having a new Boys and Girls Club. They're only being recommended $1,500. I don't want to reduce that. We need a new Boys and Girls Club. Places like Youth Learning Disabilities, those are folks that stand to lose a whole lot of money from the state. Youth Job Mentoring Training Programs, those are also programs that stand to lose a lot of money from the state. So whereas I support and appreciate what the IFC does, and I know Audrey certainly does, being a past president of the IFC. I think that they're not the only agency in town, and there are other agencies that are being hit really hard, particularly those serving people with disabilities, people with mental illness, youth, kids that are at risk, kids that are involved in the judicial system. Those programs are being completely gutted, and so I want to show support for those. Because we really need them. So that's why I'm not going to withdraw my motion.
Audrey, and you, I know you don't have your paperwork in front of me, but do you know how many students in Carrboro are serviced by the Hill Center?
I don't have that information in front of me because I didn't anticipate going through the different applications. But it was definitely how many Carrboro residents were being served by each of these organizations was certainly taken into consideration. Also, what was taken very strongly into consideration was the difference is $3,500, and what that spread across a few smaller organizations, the effect that those dollars would have on younger, less heavily salaried organizations would be a lot greater for Carrboro's money than the loss would be to the Interfaith Council that has over $1 million in payroll.
Right.
So, I mean, we were trying to say, where could we put Carrboro's money where it would get the biggest bang for the buck? And there's some very innovative and, I think, useful things coming up, not just old, new organizations, but also organizations like Club Nova that we definitely want to be able to support.
I'm very specifically asking about the Hill Center,
right.
And in full disclosure, my school where I teach is affiliated with the Hill Center. I'm wondering if the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools needs to match for the help match for the cost of the Hill Center, and that's why I'm asking that because the only children who would probably be serviced by this is through the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools.
That might not necessarily be so. You're sitting here with a parent who wrote a big check to the Hill Center for their child. And so if there are people who can't afford it, that can avail themselves of the opportunity to send their child, that gives them a leg up when they go back to the Chapel Hill school system. And, you know,
well, generally, the students, and that's where I guess it would be very specific. I mean, because when I was in the Chapel Hill Carver City Schools, there were very few students who went to Chapel Hill Culver City Schools and attended Hill Center because it's a half-day program. And I'm only asking this because it's new.
Right.
It's a new expense, and as I said, I have concerns for not meeting greater needs of those that we've previously committed to.
Well, this is why we usually don't get into this at this level of details, because, you know, this is like obviously, you know, basically choosing how we spread a very limited resource across a lot of really great organizations. But, Sammy, you haven't said anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty conflicted. It's we're obviously in a time where all kinds of organizations have high need, and there isn't so much money to go around. And so I...
Can I make a suggestion? Why don't we put this item back into its original place in the agenda and come back to this? Like, let's just think about this for in the back of our minds for an hour and a half or something.
Without compelling Audrey to...
Well, I'm willing to stay, and I don't know if this is proper or not, but I'd like to say you have a commission, the volunteer commission, and you have citizens of Carrboro who have come forth and spent, 6 to 8 weeks seriously listening to all of these applicants, mm-hmm. paying a great deal of attention, debating many points before we came down to these decisions. So, you know, of course, it's all up to the Board of Aldermen and the town of Carrboro. I'm not going to argue with anybody. I just want to let you know a lot of thought has been put into this. And a lot of us are familiar with some of the long-term organizations. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I have absolutely nothing against the IFC. I think that's a fantastic organization. But there are so many other things that could be, as I said, more effectively, our dollars would have a greater effect.
That's a more bang for the buck with the small ones, particularly the startups that are filling needs that are being created by state cuts.
And we have people who are working at or low level salaries. Some, like the Dojo School, has been working for 3 years without any salary. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's my feeling anyway. So I'll hang around.
Our donations help to help to leverage even more funds when it's seen
exactly.
that the municipality is supporting an organization. I don't think it's that way the loss to the IFC in order to support these other needs.
So yeah, I think that's a good idea. I definitely would feel uncomfortable in making a decision immediately. I'm very torn.
Well, if y'all don't mind too much, would you mind if we...
Can I ask Audrey a quick question before she leaves? Audrey, when you all go over all the different proposals, do you consider the funding that they get from the county?
Absolutely. We consider the funding they get from wherever they get it. And it's so, again, how effective will our dollars be and how dependent they would be on proceeding well.
Have you seen tie-in over the years to agencies that get more or less from the county and seen, and this is kind of a new philosophy I've seen that they've had of allocating for nonprofits the last mm-hmm. couple of years?
So where's the question in that?
Have you seen the last 2 years or so that if... My memory was that there were some Carrboro organizations that they dramatically cut money on because they saw that we weren't funding them.
What I have noticed more in the applicants coming is state funding that's being cut. That's been the biggest hit.
Right.
And, particularly in things like the mental health field and, lots of other things where they're really getting slammed.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. So, by acclamation, we'll come back to this in a little bit. We'll proceed to item A1, public hearing on land use ordinance text amendment related to 500 North Green Street. Mr. Manager.
Okay. Trish McGuire, Planning Director, has a presentation prior to the public hearing. Trish.
Thank you.
evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Lovely day in June. An overview of the request is that there has been the request that's in front of you actually is submitted only by Ken Ryder of Belmont SARE, but in conjunction with a map amendment that follows this item, which has been submitted by property owners of the related properties, the associated properties. The action that's in front of you in this item is to modify the B1GCZ zoning district to provide a means for approving residential density, additional residential density than is otherwise allowed in the B1G zoning district. The concept plan that has been submitted in conjunction with the rezoning exceeds the permitted density under the existing and requested zoning classification, that is to say, currently the B1G CZ. So the B1G CZ is a zoning district based on the B1G zoning district, our general business zoning district, which kind of wraps around the Carborough CBD B1C district, and the development standards and requirements in the B1G CZ are the same as the base zoning district. In that zone, the density requirement is, or allowance is, 1 unit per 2,000 square feet. Bless you. And conditional zoning deviates from general use rezoning in that the Board of Aldermen will be allowed to consider a specific proposal for the development of property and conditions and other information as they review a request for rezoning to that category. But the conditions cannot relieve a rezoning or development from meeting land use ordinance requirements. You can place limitations on the project related to impacts and can strengthen the requirements of the ordinance, but not remove them. So that's why we're in front of you with regard to this text amendment. And one approach that was considered was actually making a change to the B1G zoning district's density calculation or density requirement. That was considered too broad an approach. And instead, a linkage between the request for additional density and a specific B1G CZ rezoning was identified as a more targeted mechanism that would allow the board in the consideration of a rezoning request to consider also approval of a condition that would allow additional residential density. The stated reasons for this text amendment are that the additional density could be allowed were goals of creating a more vibrant and successful community are better served. In particular, there were a number of items identified in the text amendment request related to the benefits of diverse affordable housing options, increased commercial tax base, LEED and green building design, employment opportunities for minority and other types of business enterprises, direct access to public transportation, vibrant architectural design, creating a live-work community. The rationale for the structure of the draft ordinance is that, first of all, it's drawing from those noted benefits that were provided as reasons for this request. It's also drawing from outstanding recommendations from advisory boards, the planning board, the transportation advisory board, the environmental advisory board in particular, and the Board of Aldermen's commitments to energy and greenhouse gas emissions reduction. There is an emphasis on site and building elements that could be incorporated at the concept or conditional zoning level of detail. So some of the items that were noted as benefits of additional residential density are not included. What's in the draft ordinance? First of all, it amends the existing text in Section 15.182, is the section of the land use ordinance dealing with residential density, to recognize that now residential density for the CZ zoning district is determined in accordance with Section 15.141.4, which is the section of the ordinance that spells out how conditional zoning is applied and what it's subject to in terms of review. It adds new text to that section to authorize the Board of Aldermen to approve a condition allowing additional residential density subject to the inclusion of other conditions that provide for site and building elements that will create a more vibrant and successful community.
Chris?
Yes.
Is
that language, more vibrant and successful community, is it drawn from one of our documents?
It's drawn from the petitioner's, I mean the applicant's request, text amendment request.
Trish, is that CZ 15141.4 referred to by other condition? Is that the conditional zone kind of main place? Like a,
yes. Actually, Lee, I'm sorry. There is a reference. I'm pretty sure that term is used also in Vision 2020, and I can probably locate that if I if you want me to look it up. But in a little while. It's some terminology like that is used. So the draft ordinance also includes examples of 11 elements from 7 categories. Generally, the categories are energy conservation, water conservation, energy production, stormwater management, alternative transportation, mix of uses, and public art outdoor amenities. And adds a new phrase referencing. It adds a new phrase to the to section 15141.4. referencing that consideration of this deviation essentially from the ordinance requirements can now be part of the consideration of conditions on a conditional zoning. Just a few procedural notes. The text amendment is a legislative action, so the board must hold a public hearing before making a decision. It's also necessary to adopt a statement regarding consistency of the action with adopted plans or policy. When making a recommendation, with regard to the amendment, the board must also explain how the action is reasonable and in the public interest. And no members of the Board of Aldermen shall vote on on amendments where the outcome of the matter is reasonably likely to have a direct, substantial, or readily identifiable financial impact. So the Carver Vision 2020 policies that seem to be relevant to the question of residential density are 2.6.11, which has language in it regarding providing a variety of housing styles, prices and sizes, and addressing issues of density, funding, and rezoning to allow for more non-detached housing, mixed-use development, and communal living options. And 6.18, the town should pursue the development of density bonus provisions for projects incorporating environmentally sensitive development and building practices. This text amendment has been reviewed by a number of advisory boards and was also submitted to Orange County. The Planning Board recommends adoption of the draft ordinance with some modifications to the language. The Environmental Advisory Board has recommended approval of the draft ordinance. The Transportation Advisory Board recommends approval with particular note made of 2 items. The Economic Sustainability Commission does not recommend adoption of the draft ordinance. Orange County staff found no inconsistency with the adopted Joint Planning Area Land Use Plan, and the staff is recommending that the board consider the resolutions of consistency and the draft ordinance. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Go ahead.
Trish, can you or someone who would know explain why the ESC did not recommend approval of the draft ordinance?
I think I was not at their meeting. Their statement does reference the section of Vision 2020 regarding downtown vitality, which I think the item they were looking at is
the amount of
commercial square footage increase.
Right, the amount of commercial.
Way more commercial.
Inadequate amount of commercial mm-hmm. requirement, basically.
Yeah, and they brought up that this proposal actually reduces the commercial component from what we approved. Was it just a year ago, or was it 2 years ago when we approved that last rezoning for that was going to be for balanced movement?
Oh, on the property next door.
Yeah.
Right, the previous.
And the applicant for the requested text amendment is here, Mr. Ryder. If you have any questions for him, too.
Okay. I don't have anybody signed up to speak at this public hearing. Is there anybody from the public who wanted to come, who wanted to speak on this item? Okay. That guy. Patrick, come on up here if you.
I don't know if I should be speaking in the text.
The transportation issues really won't come up until the next item. Is that correct? And we really won't be hearing.
Well, I mean, except to the extent that presumably this change has some implications,
right.
But yeah, that's really more in the next
so
item.
So it that depends on what happens with this, correct?
Well, we don't, Mr. Attorney, we don't have to. We can hold this public hearing and then hold the other public hearing and then decide what, if anything, we're doing on action we're taking on both matters. Is that right?
Or yes.
Okay, in terms of sequence of events. Okay. So maybe it makes more sense to, if there are a few more questions on this, that's fine, but maybe it makes more sense to go ahead and have the next presentation and the next public hearing.
I want to talk about this on its own.
I was also going to say that we do have a letter from a citizen.
Is that from Jack?
From Jack, and you know, Jack is a local architect. He's very, very involved in things that go on here, and I would recommend all of you read that. Jack is not speaking in favor or against the project, but in advocacy of a process that is thorough and inclusive. He's asking that the hearing be continued on both of these items to the other end of summer when the board resumes its regular meeting schedule. There are many complicated issues being raised that will have consequences for all of us, and if my understanding is correct, an approval of both amendments may make it appear that tacit approval of issues that have not been fully examined and considered, not only by yourselves, meaning the board, but also the citizens, has been given to this issue. Intensity of use is particularly notable, as well as compliance with architectural standards. Some of these issues will likely not be fully considered and weighed until the actual hearing on the project. Issues should not pass under a guise not completely their own. I understand the applicant is seeking approval of these amendments to fend off additional expenses. I am sympathetic to their effort, and in fact, I am in favor of a shorter approval project. But a project of this size and consequence cannot be rushed to benefit the few at the expense of many. Thank you for your time and attention and the effort you put in, Jack Haggerty. I'm going to make sure that that's noted.
Okay. Lydia and then Dan.
I was just going to say, when we have projects of this size, it does seem like we always get a lot of information, we talk about it, we come back, and then we do our voting. Is that it seems like our timeline is even such that I wasn't even sure we'd even get it back in June. Is that a question?
I guess it depends on what more information we're asking for or not, but we have to ask for not a lot of information in order to be able to consider it in June.
I think that would be accurate. If there are a lot of questions from the board, then I think realistically we'd be looking after the summer break. The reason this was scheduled for tonight is the applicant had a timeline that we were trying to give the board an opportunity to consider a decision before the summer break if you had all of your questions answered, but with the knowledge that a project of this size might very well raise a significant number of issues and questions that might not be answered in a matter of a couple of weeks. Is that fair, Trish?
I think, yeah, it depends on what questions are asked.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Jack's memo is kind of a good opening, too, for me to talk about what my concerns are and why I would not be prepared to vote for this evening. And I think there are two main areas of concern that I have. One is that if you look at the section, let me find in the ordinance, the section 15141.4F, where it lays out all these particular, this kind of menu.
Dan, what page are you on?
It's, it has been D.
B1.
B like Benjamin, 1. So there's this whole menu of possible features, and there's really no indication here, and there's a huge range. So, for example, having an on-site plug-in for electric vehicle charging is, I think, pretty easy for a development to include, as opposed to the Architecture 2030 goal of 50% fossil fuel and greenhouse reduction. That could be a pretty major component. But there's nothing in here that says really what the standard is that we're looking for for this. And I think if you look at the planning board suggestions, they're kind of, and Damon explained this to me as well, that that in fact was their intention, that they're kind of trying to move us in that direction as well. And I think that there's two problems from that standpoint. One is that it's kind of not really clear to developers who could invest a lot of money, as this applicant had and has in proposing something, that may not in fact meet the board's actual standards. So I would like, if this comes back to us, for the staff to give us, to like look at the planning board suggestions and look at these range of possible improvements and give us some suggestions on how we could figure out what the threshold is for what is a meaningful mix. And I think one useful benchmark for understanding that is to look at what Viridia is doing, because Viridia is voluntarily doing a lot of this kind of stuff and doing it, you know, very well, and they're not asking, you know, we didn't, you know, they didn't ask for additional density to do that. I think that's maybe, I'm not suggesting that absolutely that's the standard for what a developer could do voluntarily, but I think it's, you know, one that's, we just approved, that's current, and that's perhaps instructive. Then my other concern looking at this list is I'm very interested in to the extent to which some of these may be items that we could actually incorporate into the land use ordinance. In other words, take them out of this proposal entirely and incorporate them in the land use ordinance. And I know we have legislation, a local bill, I don't know what the status of it is, that requested that we be able to implement the new building code features in regard to energy. And perhaps, again, I'm not familiar with what those are, but that may speak to some of these points. So I would like that perspective as well, because, I mean, these are all good things that we would like every development to do. We wouldn't like to have to, you know, hold out, you know, some big carrot in this, in the case of our next item, you know, four times the residential density. So I'm really interested in, this is an opportunity, I think, to look at where we are with the ordinance and what the potential is for the ordinance in terms of what we can require in terms of sustainability. So it's really those two areas. One is what our real threshold and standard would be for combining these items, and the other is the implications for the land use ordinance.
So I agree with most of what Dan said. It was interesting. I mean, I think it would benefit us to better define the number of building elements that we would expect as these relate to the proportion of additional density requested or granted. The other thing is, I know there are some elements that can already be implemented that would actually save money for the tenants or the owners of property, for example, solar thermal. The money you can save on your utility bill per month is more than the amount you pay on your monthly mortgage. And I would hope that we would be able to incorporate that as a requirement, not an option, in these conditional zoning requests. So it would obviously require that we assure that that is the case, that solar thermal would give back that payback, and if so, then that would be one of the requirements to consider. But from what I'm hearing from people I've talked to, this email and other members of the board, it sounds like it would be too rushed to pass something tonight.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the liaison to the planning board, so I overheard their entire discussion about this as well. And while I also definitely agree with the concept behind this ordinance, it does need tightened up. It needs to be streamlined a little. And the other thing is, to Sandy's point, you know, we do need a mechanism like this to get these features we're looking for, because, you know, we can't because, you know, we have, there's a building code out there, and so we can't, we're not allowed to rewrite the building code. We have to provide incentives to get some of these types of green building examples here in our developments. And so I think it's a combination of a couple of things, that there may be a few, Dan, that we can get through that, the legislation, which it doesn't, I'm not sure right now what that covers. But Sammy, I know some of the ones you're even talking about, I'm not sure we'll be able to get them absent something like this with a carrot of density or some incentive like that.
Yes.
The comment I wanted to make was that the scope of this project is quite large, and it does have implications for how we look at the downtown area and the zoning in future. And I think that the question that's been raised about creating some kind of well, we're looking at how the building elements are, you know, the conditions are looked at in the broader view in terms of the future, and having, a set of plans that follow through for each time a project comes before us. I know EAB, the Environmental Advisory Board, also came behind Planning Board in the same kind of recommendations. I know the Environmental Advisory Board is looking at a set of guidelines for buildings. So, I think it may be premature to make a decision on this until we have more information or are able to look at deeper into the scope of this project and its implications.
I'm not going to discuss the next agenda item. It's just this one. I find what Jack says to be very compelling. This is huge change for the town. I'm not always against density. I think there are times when that it's a good thing. This may allow for too much of the kind of density that we're not particularly looking for, particularly in an area where we could use more commercial base. I share staff's concern about traffic issues. So I would not support this change tonight. There would have to be some changes to the requested change to make this compelling to the community. I think something along the lines could happen, but not something that's going to allow something this intense in a vulnerable area right across the street from Historic District, abutting another residential area and on a very vulnerable street. And I don't find any compelling reason to make this change to the land use ordinance at the moment, although that's not saying that I'm not open to compelling reasons arising. I just, as it stands now, I don't see a compelling reason to vote in favor of this.
May I follow up on that? Because, I think part of what Jackie's saying relates to what I'm saying also about the standard, because, looking at the next item, I may have the proportion a little bit wrong, but my sense was that the density being requested is about four times what's allowed. And so, so part of it, there would always be a decision for the board of any particular location, whether, assuming we had a text amendment along these lines, we decide whether to put it in any given location, whether it's appropriate. But I think another part of, what developers might benefit from having a sense of is what realistically, there's the one side of what the additional sustainability features are, but then there's the other side of what might be gained from providing them. Is it four times? Is it only two times?
What's our carrying capacity?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that requires additional guidance.
This proposed amendment would only affect B1G conditional zoning district?
That's correct.
And there's only one place where we have B1G CZ zoning right now. Is that right? Those two lots or three lots?
I believe that the one lot.
Just one.
the one lot, the 500 North Greensboro Street, is the only B1G CZ. The other conditional zones downtown are both B2s.
I see where this the whole thing raises some it could have some significant implications for some other sites besides 500 North Greensboro Street. Although since nothing else is actually zoned that way right now, it's sort of
somewhat hypothetical.
But yeah, it opens a door that it's a question of whether we want to sort of throw things wide to the Board of Aldermen's discretion in the future is essentially part of what the issue is.
Future boards.
If that's a door wide open.
Not to foreshorten the conversation, but would it be appropriate to move to continue these hearings to September?
Well, I want to have the other hearing.
Okay, because isn't the other hearing kind of
contingent?
Isn't
yes.
kind of dependent on what we do with this? Because part of what's they're suggesting specific features they're incorporating in return for a specific level of density. That right now we don't know if those would even meet what we'd be looking at. The revised.
Okay. I don't see any discuss it separately.
Well, I don't. I'm not suggesting we vote on either of them. There's at least one person who came here to speak.
Okay, that's fine.
And so it would be useful to me to hear what he has to say, or anybody else that might be here to speak on it. But I also think there's the opportunity for us to give some feedback to the applicant, mm-hmm. regardless. Feedback beyond just this discussion of mm-hmm. District 1, because there are some other potential issues to discuss, like you kind of alluded to traffic and so forth. So that's my thought.
And along those lines, I mean, one reason it's much easier. I mean, there's so many things to discuss about this proposal right here. But on top of that, the following item that we're going to consider has a lot of questions still. So I doubt that we would have been able to pass this in time for the summer break anyway, given that there's still a lot of questions on the other item too.
Let's Mr. Ryder, did you want to say anything in this public hearing, or we'll recognize you in just a minute? Okay, well, why don't you come up then?
First, I want to thank everyone for their time, the board, the commissions, neighborhood, staff. They've been real helpful getting to this point. And I know one of the things that would be helpful for us, at least on this particular piece, is to understand kind of we tried to come up with a broad category that wasn't necessarily prescriptive, that gave both developers and the board and neighborhood and staff and folks to kind of come up with the features in a broad nature that would be kind of beneficial, that would ultimately lead to a project, and the conditions that we've prescribed in the next public hearing that lead to kind of a successful project. So it would be helpful for us to get some idea of where those features are and what are those descriptions. And then kind of leading into the second public hearing, it would be incredibly instructive to know and get some feedback, because they do tie into each other, right? If there's no zoning, there's no conditions, and getting some feedback on the conditions helps you on the zoning. So that would be extremely informative, and it would be helpful to hear back. We think we've come up with a compelling project that has a lot of merits, that meets a lot of the categories that are out there. I know Trisha McGuire has been extremely helpful in trying to come up with that. So we think there's a unique opportunity to develop something here that has a lot of benefits to the community, and hopefully we can get some feedback on both this piece of legislation and our conditions, because I think they do go hand in hand.
Are you still considering LEED certification?
We are.
Okay.
All right.
Mark.
Yes.
That raised a thought for me that perhaps what we need for this is some kind of point system similar to what we do with recreation points, where to meet this ordinance, you would need to have X number of points, and then each of the items listed would be assigned a certain number of points, and then we wouldn't have to be so much second-guessing which ones a developer was choosing as long as the point threshold was reached.
Well, and if you developed a system like that, you could relate the amount of density change to the points. You know, I mean,
yes, that's right.
Could be a tiered system, but
and that also would be easy to modify over time as conditions and opportunities change.
Right. Go ahead.
What would those things be?
Well, it would be what's listed here under number F, for starters. And I'm not going to say I know have any sense at all this evening.
Which the LEED certification,
things like that, number of points.
And Joel, the EAB has a list that they're working on. I just want to let you know.
EAB and Planning Board have a list, and the Planning Board has examples of communities that do this point allocation thing, Joel, by specific kind of items.
So our advisory groups are already working on this for us.
One issue I'm thinking about here is it's sort of like, Mr. Ryder has and his folks have like one specific development and one specific kind of development objective that they're pursuing, and we are very appropriately trying to discuss the kind of how the rules ought to work throughout our downtown or throughout our town, I guess I'm wondering. Yeah, I think the planning department has looked at or has been looking at some things, not exactly what we're just discussing right now, but some other issues that are related to this. But it's sort of a long-term project, and they're kind of short-staffed right at the moment. Knowing us, it could easily take us 2 or 3 years to develop a system that we would like and be comfortable with. And even if we did it fast, it would be 6 or 12 months. So
if we're going to ask them to come back in September, right, with recommendations for, say, for a point system, so we can evaluate this, then it wouldn't be 3 or 4 years, it would be until September. Maybe we'd continue it again if there were some more questions. But I don't see this as something, I agree with you that we can act on this more quickly than some of the other things that have been in the pipeline for a long time. But I don't think that means we should rush it through without addressing
it. I'm not trying to suggest that. I'm just trying to think about how we kind of this particular applicant's trying to deal with one particular side. So if we get into a really kind of broad level discussion of it, it doesn't seem appropriate to tell this applicant or every applicant, you just have to wait until we figure all of this out to solve sort of every conceivable problem around our downtown. But on the other hand, I agree. It's too broad and too vague the way it is now. Certainly.
Well, and certainly, for me, one thing I can tell Mr. Ryder is, when I look at the proposed conditions in attachment C of the next item, and I guess I'm jumping ahead there, number 6, where it says what the building elements that will be incorporated will be. I look at these and I compare them to Viridia, and it's not what Viridia is doing, and it's also, in some places, it's not very specific, like use of energy-efficient lighting, use of energy-efficient appliances. Those are, energy-efficient is a not very specific term.
Right.
So, there's a lot more that would have to be done in terms of specifying what these elements are and how they're going to attain the energy reduction and greenhouse gas reduction benefits we're looking for, mm-hmm. that would need to be specified for me to be comfortable approving it in any case.
Let's transition to the other public hearing, if we might.
I guess for me is, before we transition in it, has everybody sort of given staff direction on where they want to go in terms of what they want to see when this comes back to us in September? Because you don't want to be too definite, but you want to be definite enough so staff can understand and there's an expectation that there will be the appropriate questions were asked here now that you want more information on so that staff can respond so you won't have the issue that you indicated we can talk about it for 6 to 8 months.
Right.
And I'm not saying to speed it up, but what I'm saying is the board needs to think while we have this time fully formed to sort of convey whatever questions that they may have that they want answered.
Right.
That's my only comment. And they could be areas of what that is.
I guess I find it a little difficult to fully address that your point there without having the second public hearing.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, if it comes out in the second public hearing, that's fine, but I don't think you want to leave here after the second public hearing without propounding the appropriate question.
Right. I agree with that. Let's not necessarily completely abandon the subject, but let's hold the other public hearing and get into that issue so that we can. Because I'm wondering whether this is really the only way to approach the whole issue. I mean, you know, I think there might be other approaches on how to meet the community's goals and reasonably meet the developer's goals on this site without necessarily having to do it exactly this way.
Right. Well, now's the time to give some feedback about that.
After the public
hearing.
Right. But some of it might have to do with looking at a different zoning classification or something like that, which is why it's sort of more relevant to the next public hearing. But,
okay.
So are we going to be able to come back and
Both of these will be open topics, or that's what I'm anticipating.
Today.
That's all right.
So do we need, I would move that we continue this public hearing. Do we need to do that?
Do we need to continue this public hearing
or just
to a particular date or...
Well, once you've held the public hearing, you don't have to continue it. But on the other hand, if you're going to hold another public hearing, you've held a public hearing on this ordinance. That's all you were legally required to do. But on the other hand, if you're going to want us to come back with a different ordinance or another ordinance, you may have to hold another public hearing anyway. If you're just going to discuss this ordinance further and you want to take additional public input, then it would probably make sense to continue the hearing rather than re-advertise the hearing.
I see. I'll take that as a motion from Jackie to continue this public hearing to sometime in September.
I'll second it, but I have a question. I'm not trying to amend it. So if the board decides that it needs entirely different language, would it then have to hold a separate public hearing?
Yeah, I think, let me just comment on the kind of ordinance which Dan was describing is probably not this ordinance. It's probably, now, this is a conditional ordinance drafted, it provides for conditional zoning. The nature of conditional zoning is such that the developer proposes or the town can propose and the developer accepts, but there has to be mutual agreement upon the conditions. And therefore, they can't be put in the form of an ordinance and say these are requirements.
Even to say X number of points, that would be too much specificity. Like if we went to like a point system.
I think what you're talking about is a different. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking how that could be drafted, and I'm not prepared to say exactly how it would be, but or whether it could be. But it would be more along the lines of some sort of point system ordinance, which would say you get a certain amount of additional density for in relationship to a certain number of points that you get, and the points are based upon the following criteria, and blah, blah, blah. That's something different than conditional zoning. I'm not sure exactly what you'd call it or how we would draft it, but it would be a different ordinance than this one.
Different enough to need a different hearing.
Yes, that's the point.
I put forth this motion because I think there are other board members who want some questions answered. I am not sure that I would support the concept in general. I need a thorough discussion with the community. I mean, Jack can sometimes be one of our canaries. When Jack's chirping about something, you can bet other people are talking about it. I think the implications are really broad. I'm not sure that I'm willing to, you know, quadruple our density on a particular property for X, you know, energy can, I'm not sure. I simply want to continue it so that other board members can get there. But I have concerns with the concept in general. But we can continue that.
And the question was also raised in addition to, I mean, it's not just an energy conversion in that particular location. It's the commercial. You know, the question of commercial. So all I'm saying is, how do you factor that into a checklist? I'm not sure.
Yeah, and the commercial question, that kind of goes to the specifics of 500 North Greensboro Street, which is why I want to, that's the kind of issue that I want to discuss in the next public hearing.
Can I ask one more question, Mike? Can the board identify its portion, a priori, of what it would take? You know, it's a mutual agreement between the developer and the board or the town. Can the board identify a requirement that it agrees would be a necessary component for agreement with the developer within a conditional zone agreement?
Well, that gets delicate, shall we say, because, if it has to be mutually agreed upon condition, then we put in the ordinance that the only way we're going to rezone this is if you do X, but it's not really a voluntary condition. It becomes a requirement. And so I think that would be problematic. That's one of the reasons we use this sort of laundry list as illustrative of things that the developer could propose and the town and the board could say, well, you know, in this particular case, unless you have this condition in addition to the others that you proposed, we're not interested. But to put something in the ordinance that says, you know, thou shalt have X, Y, and Z things, it really becomes a requirement, not a voluntary condition. And there are some things beyond that, some things, responding to something that you said earlier, that you can't make as requirements in any form, and that would be these condition requirements that modify the state building code, unless we get, you know, our local legislation, which I haven't heard anything about. So
would we run into problems with the state building code if we said you need to choose two from this list? Wouldn't that essentially be the same problem? I mean, if we had only two things on the list and we said you can choose two, you know,
that's pushing it.
But I mean, does more things on the list make that less of an issue? Is that how it would work?
Again, I don't know where exactly the line turns or falls, but I mean, it's one thing to say, here's a list, as we have done in this ordinance, here's a list of things which we feel, as it says, will create a more vibrant and successful community. These are the kinds of conditions which we suggest the developer consider proposing. It's not an exclusive list. That's one thing to say. It's another thing to say, and you must choose four of the following list. You know, and then it's another step beyond that to say, and two of them must be these.
We can't say condition how many you could choose. In other words, it's getting at the question of, you know, how many we'd expect, how many elements would be expected as related to the proportion additional density requested. Would we be able to do that?
Again, it seems to me you're dealing with two different kinds of ordinances. You've got this kind where the conditional, and there's a potential list of conditions, or you could do a conditional zoning. It doesn't even have to have a potential list, but there will be conditions that are proposed. That's conditional zoning. A different kind of ordinance is one that may go towards some kind of a point system that says, you know, you get additional density either directly related to the number of points or some sort of threshold, and here's the list of things that you can do to achieve these points. That's a different kind of district, and we just have to think through how to draft that. But it's a different ordinance. It's not conditional.
Sounds like it requires more time to think about. I was hoping we would be able to identify that. We as a board, really don't have any say as to the conditions and whatever we, you know, it's just really up to the applicant to agree with the board, but it sounds more complicated, so we're definitely not going to get close to a decision tonight.
Dan?
Yeah, I have a question for Ken while you're up there. I just wanted to be clear, if we're not able to approve this tonight, is this project still alive for you or not? Because I got...
We'll still proceed.
You will, okay.
Yes.
I guess depending on what we have to say the next public hearing.
I think getting it'll be instructive to get feedback from the second public hearing about what this project looks like. There are things beyond the site and building features that I think contribute to the comfort that the board would have in providing the additional density. It's not just having a plug-in outlet for a car. We think having... And I don't want to, you know, get into it, but I think it'll be helpful to give guidance to staff on what those criteria look like. We started this process back in January with going down this very path of a point system or individual criteria, and we actually got to this broader approach that gave the flexibility for developers to have some, because not every formula is going to work for every site, so there's probably, you know, a half a dozen or a couple dozen more sites where this might work. So it would say you wouldn't have to, and if you get too prescriptive, if someone comes in and they hit it, even though it's something you may not like, they may make the checklist. And on the other hand, there may be you may not be able to do all 7 or 10 categories, but if they're doing one thing very, very well, that's if they do 100% commercial building and we want that, but they don't do the other 6 things, you may be stuck not being able to approve something. So the approach that we took, we thought had a lot of merit. There was still the time to come back with the second map amendment saying this is what this project is trying to reach and its concept. And then even after that process, there still is the conditional use permit process where right. You can further lock in. So this first piece is kind of just setting the framework of the things and features of a project that we think is successful, however we want to measure that, and that's what that list does. These are things that are illustrative of a successful project. Then there's another process that says, here's the concept plan, and this project either meets enough of those illustrative areas or it doesn't to proceed. And then even after that point, even if those two pieces were approved through the text amendment and the map amendment, you still have to execute through the conditional use permit to actually move forward with the project, which everyone knows is, you know, you have to really deliver on what you said. So we thought that this beginning piece was a framework that could set. We'll be back again talking about these various things, and whether that menu of things are correct. Is really, I think, it will be helpful to talk about the specific project, so if nothing else, you can provide some feedback to staff so that you get that framework right, so that when people come to talk about their projects, it's kind of set up to be successful if you meet the criteria that that have been outlined.
All right. Let's go to item A2.
Do we need to vote on...
We have a motion on the floor on continuing this public hearing to September.
A second.
All those in favor...
It's
been seconded by...
Okay.
All those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, as unanimously. Is there a staff presentation on the rezone?
Yes,
and then
there is.
We'll probably hear from Ken again right after that.
That is correct.
Just before we get started, without the rezoning, how many units would be allowed on that combined property?
I have a slide up to that shows that, I think.
Thank you.
I'm not sure it breaks it. I think it's sufficient to answer that question. The property owners of the four parcels have signed on to this petition for rezoning, as well as Mr. Ryder, who's the contract purchaser for the property. Mm-hmm. And these lots total approximately 2.69 acres on the east side of North Greensboro Street near the Shelton Street intersection. The action that's been requested is the application of B1G conditional zoning to these properties, subject to mutually agreed upon conditions. This is the town's fourth conditional zoning request since the mechanism was established in 2008. It is the largest so far.
What were the other three?
The B2 CZ zoning on Center Street, mm-hmm, for hair salon use and a couple of other uses, and a similar rezoning for property on North Greensboro Street. And
the Fitch property at the corner of
Poplar and North Greensboro.
Okay. A house there.
And then the rezoning of this property, a portion of this property, the lot 500 North Greensboro Street last year.
Okay.
So the scale is both ends on the scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. So the petition in this instance consists of several different components. First of all, the actual form that's filled out in which the request is presented, and the justification for the explanations of why and how these changes are beneficial for the community. There's also, in this case, a concept plan that's been submitted, and it has a cover sheet and then a one-sheet site plan. These pieces here. Whoops, sorry about that. And here, there is also a list of proposed conditions, and of course there was an application fee and envelopes, mailed notice envelopes, and so forth. The petitioner also did submit building elevations and rendering, which you have copies of in your packets. Those are not part of the proposed to be attached to the rezoning. So they're illustrations, and Mr. Ryder has a presentation that can show you those this evening. The properties we're talking about are located here on North Greensboro Street, north of the Parker Street, which is a small, unimproved public street. This is Center Street, the Center Street intersection.
Shelton.
I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Shelton Street, north of East Poplar. Intersection with North Greensboro. So we have 404, 406, and 500 North Greensboro Street, 113 Parker Street, as the properties included in the rezoning petition. And then the surrounding properties. These properties are currently zoned. This one's B1G CZ. These three properties are zoned CT. The two in the rear are currently vacant. There are residential structures on the two properties fronting on North Greensboro Street. And there's Fitch property to the north and M1 zoning on that parcel, CT zoning otherwise here and across the railroad tracks over to the east. The property on the west side of North Greensboro Street is zoned R75, with the exception of this property here at the corner of Poplar and North Greensboro, which is the B2 CZ zoned property we were just discussing. And just an aerial photograph of the lots here and here, and then one there and there. This is the Parker Street unimproved right of way. Of course, this is Southern States here, Harris Teeter over here, North Greensboro Street in this location. We're looking to the west in this view.
Trish, in the previous slide, is that an error, that subliminal driveway on Parker Street into the 113 Parker Street lot?
Is this an error?
Well, the way it wanders into the lot.
These are planimetric. It's a planimetric layer that's just shown here. So that shows there's some sort of surface, like a paved surface. So.
Oh,
so there is a gravel this is a gravel road, and there's gravel that goes back into this lot.
There's like some parking or something back on that lot right now, I think.
Yeah, there's a...
Which is what it's trying to show you.
Yeah. This is the streetscape along North Greensboro Street looking to the east. So this is the property, 500 North Greensboro Street. Here's 404. And then properties flanking on the north and on the south. So the proposed development that's included in the concept plan has two buildings shown, and an associated surface and below building parking and associated infrastructure, sidewalks, for example, and some outdoor kind of open space. The first building fronting on North Greensboro Street is a three-story building, has a two-story segment for the first 10 feet within the DNP, Downtown Neighborhood Protection Overlay buffer area. And that building is proposed with 12,000 square feet of ground floor non-residential uses and two stories above containing 24 residential units. And the second building is a four-story building, for the most part, containing 90 residential units. There is parking shown below approximately one half of the building. The lot drops off to the rear, to the east, down towards the railroad right-of-way.
The railroad tracks.
Here's just a larger view of that concept plan I showed you a minute ago. This is Building A in this location. This hatched area is the Downtown Neighborhood Protection Overlay buffer area. And then the building in the rear, and then surface parking here. There is a proposed future cross-access easement connection to the Fitch property. The drive entrance is right here at this location, lined up with Shelton Street.
Is that the only entrance?
That is.
So there would be no access on Parker?
As it is shown, that is correct.
Wasn't there something in the report about an emergency vehicle access?
That is one of the staff's proposed conditions. Yeah. The applicant has proposed a number of conditions on the property related to the height of the building closest to North Greensboro Street, the driveway access aligning with Shelton Street, minimum parking, condition dealing with parking on the site, and that all structures currently on the property will be offered for relocation prior to beginning construction, a provision dealing with the provision of affordable housing in relation to rents at 80%, not exceeding 80% of the median family income.
So that's like not working with the land trust. That's instead putting that in on their own. Is that correct? I didn't notice any Robert Dowling letters.
I believe Mr. Ryder has been in communication with, okay, with Robert, and I think it would be best if he speaks to that at the end. I'm going to raise one point about the rent level, but in a few minutes, but or maybe not that long. But we could talk about that further. The following, and then the petitioner, the applicant, has listed, has proposed a number of conditions related to provision of site and building elements. Sorry about that. Didn't switch. Covered bike parking, on-site plug-in, some shading devices for minimizing cooling and heating, insulation, energy-efficient motors, lighting, appliances, rainwater harvesting techniques included, roof covering that is reflective, and then limiting the land uses to those listed on the concept plan, and the property's development substantially in accordance with the concept plan. And then just taking that site plan and laying it over the property, an ortho photo of the area for reference. So what are the differences between the existing and requested rezoning? The residential density is probably the biggest change in that the current B1G portion Do you mind if I correct that typo there? No. my apologies. The existing B1G portion of the rezoning does not include a specified residential component. So I think that that would leave us to some interpretation, but we have not bridged that question or had to bridge it with regard to a proposal, but it's not specified on their plan. There wasn't any discussion of residential uses in the project at the time. And so it leaves it a little bit open as to whether or not it's excluded or permitted in terms of the way that rezoning was went forward. In any event, if it were B1, if residential uses were allowed on the B1G portion of the property as it's currently rezoned, the CZ portion, the 500 North Greensboro lot, that lot is about two-thirds of an acre. The zoning for B1G is 3,000 square feet per dwelling unit, so that would be something like 5 residential units, I think, permitted on the lot. The existing zoning CT is, so the other three lots are the density required is 7,500 square feet per dwelling unit with 14 units permitted. And the requested rezoning, of course, to B1G CZ as it stands right now would also yield 3,000 square feet per dwelling unit and a density on the site overall of about 36 dwelling units. The proposal, as we know, is 414 units in conjunction with the use of this draft ordinance that provides for some additional density to be approved in conjunction with conditions.
For comparison, Trish,
yes.
You say the site totals 2.69 acres. How many square, what's the square footage of that?
That's almost, I'm sorry, that's 12,000 square feet.
Nope.
I mean, 120,000 square feet or okay. So. I think that's just roughly. The lot size requirements are 3,000 square feet for the B1G, 40,000 for the CT zoning, which some of you may recall when the rezoning came through last year, that was one of the issues on the table for the CT zoning, that was their desire to actually be able to subdivide off a piece of the property and use a smaller segment in terms of kind of long-term how they thought the site might be managed and used. And this site is, as I mentioned earlier, is 2.69 acres. The height provision in the B1G CZ zoning from last year is 35 feet, set per an exhibit that was attached to the rezoning. It's 3 stories in the CT, and it's 2 to 4 stories in the proposal before you. Of course, the B1G rezone, I mean B1G as it stands, could go up to 5 stories. There is parking beneath a portion of that, which some of which may count as a 5th story, depending on how when it's reviewed, and, you know, if it were approved and reviewed in greater detail. But that is permitted under the land use ordinance. The setbacks for all of these zones are the same: 0 at the right of way and 0 at the lot boundary line. Office and retail uses were included in the rezoning last year. A variety of uses are allowed in the CT, similar to the B1G. CZ, but not entirely. They're not entirely identical, and we can go through that list in the abstract if you have any questions. The proposal in this situation is for residential, retail, office, cultural, library/cultural, or restaurant uses. There are a number of provisions or requirements associated with conditional rezoning. First of all, you can only ask for rezoning to either the B1G conditional zoning or the B2 conditional zoning district. Those are the only two, and this request is for one of those. All the owners of the property have to request the rezoning, and the owners of the properties have signed the petition seeking this change. The uses that are proposed have to be ones that are allowed in the general use district, and unless you limit them and don't allow all the ones that are allowed there, and that is the case in this situation. The uses that have been proposed are permissible in the B1G zoning district, and we have evaluated the materials to the extent that we can. Obviously, there's not a great deal of detail provided in the materials that we have at this point to see whether and the extent to which the project can comply with the land use ordinance otherwise. Absent, you know, an actual public hearing and findings of fact associated with impacts of the project and so forth. The application, when it's submitted, as I mentioned before, does include a couple of different components, materials that are to be submitted, including a list of proposed conditions, and the applicant, the petitioner here, has submitted the concept plan and a list of conditions. And it's not possible for conditions on this project to, as I mentioned earlier in the text amendment situation, to deviate from the requirements of the land use ordinance. We'll have a little bit more discussion, I expect, about the conditions. And then the final point is that the uses shall require the issuance of the same type of permit that the use in the corresponding general use district would ordinarily require, and the proposed use of this property would require a conditional use permit at some point in the future. So some additional comments about item 4, which is the list of conditions. Per that section, the board cannot approve a condition that waives or reduces an LUO requirement that will apply when the permit is requested later. So the applicant's proposed conditions currently 1 and 3, which deal with the issue of building, the three stories on the building, not exceeding the three stories of the building, and the amount of parking, are ones that the staff has identified as not being able to be included because they do sort of preclude the actual review of a project for compliance with the land use ordinance at a later date.
You mean that 1 and 3 and parking cannot be included in the scope of this decision tonight?
That's correct. Those are conditions that sort of preclude by your would preclude your the need to make an evaluation and a finding later that the project would comply with the land use ordinance.
So we would go ahead and approve the project without the parking component in it? And then when would we address the parking component?
Well, the issue with the parking is the way the draft condition has been, the condition has been worded, it states that the parking minimum required parking will be less than the minimum number of spaces required by the ordinance for the proposed uses.
So we would have very little control over any of these five things once we pass this. Is that correct?
Let me take a stab at addressing that, because you recall that in the ordinance, in the CUP stage, the parking requirements are presumptive, and you're allowed to make a specific finding in the context of the conditional use permit that less parking is needed than the presumptive standard would suggest. And the board has routinely done that. But that's at the CUP stage and not at this stage. At this stage, what you're saying is that particular condition basically says is waiving the ordinance requirement, which you can't do at this stage. Now, what you can do, obviously, is keep in mind that the developer's intent would be to propose at the CUP stage a lessening, less parking than the presumptive standard requires. And so you know that at the time that you would be considering this rezoning. And if that doesn't appeal to you, that might be one of the things that would lead you in one particular direction.
Okay.
Trish, does
thanks, Mike.
Removing condition 3 in some way invalidate condition 8 in terms of whether it can be substantially developed according to the concept plan? I mean, if the concept plan has to have more parking potentially, then is the concept plan going to change?
I think that there is some need for, if that condition is to be included, which we have included as an underlined one, but that there would need to be some fairly liberal interpretation of the term substantially for two reasons, the first of which is the parking issue, and then the second of which is the architectural standards for downtown development, which is, that is to say, so that was my final, so the second point was about parking. The second bullet point here is about specifically about conditions 1 and 3, proposed conditions 1 and 3. The second point there is that we would caution you also to understand that, or to identify and consider any reservations about any representations of the architecture or the site plan in the way that it plays into the subsequent need to evaluate this project for consistency with the architectural standards for downtown development. And principally, the principal consideration or concern there, or or caution is the fact that there is a requirement for parking to be shielded from the street as part of the architectural standards for downtown development, and this parking, of course, is not shielded by the driveway entrance on the sort of half of the frontage of the property. So that is another cautionary note, and it plays into this, again, sort of point about the final condition, which is there would need to be some interpretation. You may want to take out the word substantially if you don't have a comfort level with that. But it is sort of an inseparable condition for this proposal, in that it is the concept that they have submitted with regard to two buildings and a parking area associated with it. So it doesn't seem like one that can be taken away if there is an interest in proceeding with approval of the rezoning.
But I have a cautionary note. Question about the shielding from the shielding the parking from the street. Is that just the frontage of Greensboro Street, or would that necessarily apply to Lloyd Street? Because then the people who live on Lloyd Street are going to see it.
I think if I can pull an ordinance open and take a look at that question in a few minutes, I can
wait.
Okay. I don't have the answer on the tip of my tongue.
Trish, the Transportation Advisory Board proposed in the conditional zoning a condition that would ask the applicants to consider unbundling parking requirements from residential units. And so if that were included as a condition, would it change the issues that we're discussing with the parking, if the applicant were to decide that they would take on that as one of the conditions to unbundle parking to residents?
Well, I think the issue of parking is one that needs to be, in the way that this condition has been proposed, it needs to be handled at a later stage. I mean, there is parking depicted on the concept plan. Again, so sort of substantially in accordance with it, shows there is surface parking versus a constructed parking deck or something else. But I don't think unbundling the parking would be a condition that would be one that we could either you would want to include, because it does sort of the same thing. It assumes that down at some point in the future when you're actually reviewing the project for the presumptive, its compliance with the presumptive standards, or the board is granting a deviation from the parking, that's presupposed. You've already taken that off the table, and so you're circumventing the need to do that at the time the permit is issued.
We can't do that. We can't.
I don't believe so.
If we were to eventually, because there's a lot of interest of this by the Transportation Advisory Board to unbundle or find ways in which to unbundle parking from residents when they're downtown. Apparently Durham does this and other places do it. So I'm just curious as to, so apparently conditional zoning wouldn't be the place to do it. It would probably be within the ordinance itself.
Within the ordinance or as part of the permit. There's some room to change parking requirements during the conditional use permit.
Mm-hmm. Mike has that look like he wants to say something. Mm-hmm.
About it. I just don't want unbundled from the parking means.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm sorry. You don't what?
I don't know what unbundled parking means.
Unbundling parking is separating the requirement that developers provide a certain amount of parking per residential unit, and this is being used in some downtown areas. Recognition of the lack of need for some parking when there's enough public transportation or walkability or bikeability.
Like an extreme example, I guess, in Manhattan, when you buy a condominium, you're not necessarily buying a parking space that comes with it. You buy that, or at least that separately.
And one of the assumptions is developers wouldn't build anything that they feel wouldn't get sold if tenants or people who live there weren't going to have parking, they're going to buy it. So it's a risk. The risk is not a requirement. It's a risk that the developer would take on. And it would be a huge cost savings if developers assess that risk and found that they wouldn't have to pave so much. It would also make a lot more green space and more livability within downtowns.
I think that would require an ordinance change, because the existing ordinance now says you've got to provide sufficient off-street parking to handle the parking demands.
Right. So that's what you're
And the board, in the granting of the permit, can find that the presumptive standard is you don't have to have as many parking spaces as a presumptive standard would suggest you need in order to comply with the basic requirement of having enough parking to satisfy the demand. But a standard that would be not satisfying the parking demand would be a different standard, so it would require an ordinance amendment.
So it would require an ordinance.
Yes.
And before we would even discuss that, I think we would need to discuss what that would actually mean to surrounding properties, and also what that would mean for the town operationally if somebody is violating that by parking in surrounding neighborhoods, and what that would cost operationally for the police.
Or public parking lots.
And public parking lots.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, commercial.
Definitely take a lot of gestures.
I think, I have put 400 miles on my car since January. You've probably put more on yours. But I have that car, you know. Piece of blank that it is. I have it to go those 400 miles that I need to go periodically. People have cars, and we want them to drive less. We want to encourage them to drive less. But I think to say you can have less parking means go park in Carmel. Or if you have a party, they're going to park up and down Shelton Street. They're going to park in the apartment building down the block. They're going to park in Carmel. And so that's giving an economic advantage to one entity at the disadvantage, both economically and quality of life, to the other entities. If it was Manhattan, that's cool. You'd be stupid to have a car in Manhattan, you know. But we're not Manhattan, and it's really not my goal to be Manhattan. In case people don't know that about me, it's not up there on my list, but I think reducing parking it's a great ideological thing, but it's can you then say if you buy this apartment or if you rent this apartment you may only have one car? Can you then say that? No, you cannot say that. So, you know, I Mike and I are both over 30, and so we didn't know what. Speak for yourself, yeah. So we didn't know what unbundling meant, you know. But anyway, I think that's a full other discussion.
Yeah, it means
that in this case, okay. I'm probably not in favor of decreasing the parking requirements. And neither is Carmel Mall or surrounding neighbors or Capelli's, yeah.
I mean, hopefully not too many more. So traffic impacts is one of the things noted in our agenda item, abstract. The petitioner has submitted a traffic impact analysis, and there have been some, it's under review. It's been under review with some areas of discussion, including question about the trip generation rates, the level of service at the site entrance exit, left turns into the site at the peak hour, and the need for adjustments to the street cross-section, including possible turn lanes or the effect on the bike existing and the effect on the existing bike lanes, and then additional street connections, the need for possibility of, et cetera. NCDOT has provided preliminary comments in communication with our transportation planner, Jeff Brubaker, and their formal evaluation is still pending. Their preliminary comments are that the site will generate substantial volume of daily trips. There is a poor level of service at the site access in Shelton Street approaches, although it's not uncommon for developments accessing arterials. It is still not a desirable condition. Given the conflicting through traffic at the Greensboro site access intersection, NCDOT is likely to indicate that a left turn lane is needed to prevent congestion and queuing on North Greensboro. It is another question entirely as to whether this is feasible given the right-of-way and the presence of bike lanes. And then the addition of a second crosswalk on the south side of Greensboro-Shelton intersection crossing Greensboro is advised. I believe that's shown on your site plan already, so they had just seen an earlier copy of that concept plan. As far as adopted policies and plans, there are a number here, and in the interest of time, I might just note that some of them seem to be positives and some are negatives with regard to this project. That is to say, it weighs on the plus side in some respects and in the negative on the other. I'm happy to go into answer questions about the specifics if you would like, or I can explain them, whichever is your preference.
Why is affordable housing a negative?
Affordable housing is a plus and minus in that they're proposing affordable housing. The proposed condition is referencing rents at 80% of the median income. The original ordinance provision that the town had with regard to the density bonus, which is where we've articulated the definition of affordable housing, was seeking a lower income level. When it was revised a couple of years ago, we moved it up to 80, and I'm not exactly sure why that happened. I don't think that was a specific interest. It may have been an oversight. So we have on our plate, you know, looking at the question of affordable housing and this question of providing a range of affordability, that is to say, perhaps from up to, you know, 100% of the median and 120% of the median, some provision there. But I think in conjunction with that, we also need to look at this language and probably put in language that's really going to get down to folks at 65% of the median for rental housing in any way at a minimum, because that's really more, in fact, it could be even lower than that.
Share what
to be
the number is
consistent.
Rich. The rent.
What is 65%?
Well, now, what is the 80%?
What is the 80%?
80% is for these types of the housing that are this type of unit is in the range of, I think, for a two-bedroom, almost $1,000. It's 900 and some, I think, is the number, and it's 820 or 850 for one-bedroom. So it's fairly high at 80%.
We have a lot of them in that range. Already.
That's correct. We do, and so that's the issue, and that's why it's a plus and minus, because if there is recognition of the need for affordable housing, that there's not maybe the best parameter for that condition yet, and
he puts two students in each bedroom.
So
that's affordable. Okay, go ahead.
So
that's probably enough on that.
Okay. Alrighty, thanks. This is a background slide, which is an overview of recent development projects. It has percentages and square footages.
My eye doctor showed me this.
I wanted to see if everyone was looking. This is just to show, it's really for reference if anyone has a question. It shows the breakdown for percentages of commercial versus residential for a number of projects in Carboro, and then two that have been under development or recently developed in Chapel Hill.
On this for just a second, can you...
So I can read them out because they're rather small.
Well, let's not read all those numbers, but I think two of them are probably particularly interesting. I recall that the extent of the commercial component was an issue in particular with regard to two projects that we approved within the last 5 or 6 years. And I think they were the Alberta and the Butler, is that
yep.
right?
Yep.
And what they were, I'm seeing there, what they were approved with was 15% commercial on the Alberta site and 26% in the Butler condominiums. But Butler is where the junkyard was.
That's right.
Alberta, right.
And Butler's more units, though, isn't it? It's like they're going up in another story.
It is.
I just meant that in both of those cases, I recall that the developer really tried to get us, tried to convince us to go down on the amount of commercial space required. Actually, maybe to zero in both cases. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, but just for perspective, what we approved was 15% and 26%. But now, remind me one other thing, because actually I'm surprised how different those two numbers are. But one of them. The one project was in one zoning district and the other was in a different zoning district. Is that right?
The Butler was in a B1G zoning district, and they asked for B1C conditional use rezoning. And so it's a B1G CU district now. Mm-hmm. And they did that because they were seeking to increase the residential density of the project.
Mm-hmm.
And that was approved. And the requirement, though, because of B1C has a requirement for ground floor residential, and consequently they originally really were interested in just primarily and only a solely residential project. Mm-hmm. But they did include one floor of commercial in the site plan in conjunction with the B1C CU rezoning.
And
the Alberta was a B1G parcel and also B2. So it was two different zoning districts. The back of that parking lot,
right?
That goes down towards the Maple Avenue and Roberson Square neighborhood, Roberson Place neighborhoods, mm-hmm. was zone B2, and they rezoned the whole piece to B1G CU to allow enough residential density to make the building, you know, have 48 units, and no, it's not 48, and it's 18 units or something like
and
that.
And the requirement there was
they did put in some commercial on the ground floor.
They wanted to not do ground floor commercial, basically. Correct.
They had pursued a text amendment to for a different approach that would take away the requirement for ground floor residential in the B1C conditional. There were some parameters associated with that, and that was the board didn't approve that change. And so they went forward with a different strategy, which was the B1G CU rezoning on the whole parcel.
I just wanted to put this.
Trish, do you recall what the commercial percentage we set for the ORMU was? Because I remember that also came up for some debate.
I believe
quite a few years ago now.
Yeah, I think it's 75-25, but you can go to 90-10 if you do certain things. I believe that's it, but I can find that out specifically.
Okay, just curious. This is, you know, another, you know, something we've done in the last, I guess, 5 years.
Yeah. So everyone's suffering from eye strain now. Procedurally, this is a legislative action, as the same with the text amendments, so the same guidance regarding taking action, adopting statements of consistency, and explaining how the action is reasonable and in the public interest. The Planning Board has recommended approval of the rezoning with conditions. The EAB has done the same. The Transportation Advisory Board has as well. The Economic Sustainability Commission does not recommend approval. The staff's identified benefits and limitations of the project. The extent of the limitations are such that the staff recommendation is not in support of the requested change. However, several action options have been identified, including that the board might request additional information or deny the request, that you might delay the decision until confirmation from the NCDOT regarding the need for changes to North Greensboro Street, since it is fairly significant with regard to the presence of the bike lanes and just the streetscape in general, and the comprehensive bicycle transportation plans sort of position. And then you know, moving forward with rezoning, considering the staff-identified conditions. The first four that are underlined are conditions that there's agreement between the applicant and the condition at the present time. And then the additional ones, the fifth one, I think Mr. Ryder has indicated that he'll explain, I think, in a minute his reservations, but also his willingness to certainly work on a modified condition with regard to affordable housing. It's number six. There is not an interest in that condition. The bedroom-bathroom ratio, he's willing to support that one. Parking configuration along Parker Street, he's willing to support that one. And number nine is really just a note for the board that none of these include any of those site and building elements that you will want to decide upon. So those are other conditions that would be included here.
Trish, in terms of the bedroom, bathroom, some of the other downtown two bedrooms that I'm familiar with typically have one and a half baths. Like often the bedrooms are upstairs with a full bath, and then there's a half bath downstairs. So it seems like we could perhaps also specify that for a two-bedroom, the ratio would not exceed one and a half to one.
I think you could propose that and see if that would work.
Would you be agreeable to that?
Yeah, I think there needs to be some that are two-bedroom, two-bath, some that are two and one and a half. But there needs to be a broad spectrum of units to meet the different demands in the marketplace. So I guess the answer is yes. There needs to be some kind of, you know, configuration of the work.
That's the last slide.
Okay. Jackie, and we have... I want to hear from Mr. Ryder again and also from at least one member of the public, but for context.
Trish, you and I have been here a while, I think. When was the last time that, would you go back to the previous slide, please? When was the last time that you made that recommendation? The extent of the limitations are such that the staff recommendation is not in support of the requested change. I can't.
Been a while.
It's been a while.
I think it may have been 1998, but I'd have to go back and check to be sure.
So that's not something you say lightly.
No.
Right. Okay. No. Thank you.
Thanks, Jackie. Fair point. Mr. Ryder, you want to address the board again?
I would.
And then we'll hear from Patrick and anybody else who wants to speak.
Yeah. Before he speaks, I'm coming.
You want to take a break after Ryder?
Yeah.
How long will
we're going to take a short break after Mr. Ryder, and then we'll hear from Patrick.
I'll just thank everyone for their time again. I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking a little bit about the project, some of its features, and then Dan Jewell with Coulter Jewell will talk a little bit about some of the context, as will Design Collective, about some of the architectural features and how we got to where we were. But I'd like to spend a lot of time on kind of the features and the benefits and things that get back to kind of the conditions and ultimately the text amendment that would be kind of required to allow something like this to move forward. So I'll just jump into it. Trish has covered a lot of this already. We started from the outset, even 6 months ago, to try to do a mixed-use, market-rate, affordable workforce. How that's described, and you get into the details, is anywhere from 80% to 120% of AMI. And then after talking with staff and talking with Robert Dowling, you know, we talked about what those other measurements might be, and we've always been trying to accommodate what those features would look like and what those numbers would look like.
Can I ask you a question
like
on that?
Mm-hmm.
How do you differentiate, in terms of this project, workforce housing from student housing?
It's more based on income level, so we're not proposing to do a student housing project per se that we're marketing to students. And
right,
that's
what would make a student not choose to live there and a worker choose to live there?
Exactly. There's design elements, there's features, there's parking. There's just, frankly, just marketing and things like that. We think there's a demand in downtown Carrboro and the area for, you know, non-students who are looking for reasonably priced, nice apartments in the downtown area that are near kind of the amenities, the schools, and the shopping and things along those lines. So, per se, there isn't any one thing you can say, this will eliminate students. I mean, they're, you know, without getting into kind of a legal discussion of whether you can not pursue that.
If a student walks in with a deposit, a rent check, and a good reference, they'll be accepted. And they would look sure.
You could, right. You could. You could. I think there's...
I just want to be clear, because, you know, workforce is part of your pitch, and, you know, it, you know, would be helpful to me. And maybe this is something we can defer to when you come back, if you can provide some more detail on what would make this workforce as opposed to student housing.
Yeah, when I describe workforce here, it's really about a band of income, which is roughly from, you know, depending on what HUD document or other, you know, where you go for reference, it's really about incoming about 80 to 120% of AMI is roughly what that means, and then affordable being something less than 80%. A little bit about the context of the project. I'll let Dan talk a little bit, but one of the things that we first came to at this point was, you know, where is it appropriate to put something of this scale and this nature? And when we got to this point, we kind of zoomed back and said, you know, where are there locations in downtown where something of at least the footprint and the scale of this makes sense? So I'll let Dan talk a little bit about how we got to here, and then I'll jump back in to talk about some of the more detail.
Thanks, Dan.
Evening, everybody. Dan Jewell again. Just a couple of quick things to point out. Trish did a very thorough job, so I'm not going to repeat what she said. But one of the things that really is, I think, striking about this part of Carrboro, if you look at it from the air photo, you can see we've darkened in the building footprints. You can see this part of Carlborough is actually characterized largely by very large building footprints and very large surface parking lots. And that's why, as Ken said, is he and I started looking at appropriate areas in Carlborough where the context was such that the scale of this project would be appropriate in the context of the other things. We thought this was very much it. A very other important point is the reason that we feel there is a great community benefit to putting a residential project of this scale with a mixed-use component, with a commercial component, in this location, is we're going to be putting 150 to 200 people within a 5 to 6 minute walk of a grocery store, of shopping, of other stores, of coffee shops, of restaurants and bars and places to work. That's what's most important. And we think that in itself is going to be a huge benefit to the vitality of downtown Carlborough. Bringing people downtown who can walk there or ride their bike there, as opposed to all of those people who, if they lived farther out of town, would have to take their cars to get in too. Yes?
This is a very unique high-density residential property in downtown. And as a developer, and supposing, you know, we're not going to make this decision tonight. This is for my ability to understand the context and what developers would deem, you know, useful or not. So would unbundling parking facilitate, or would you decrease the amount of parking, or do you find it necessary to have this amount of parking to have these units built?
I'll let Ken answer that question, but I will allude back to a comment somebody made earlier. Downtown Durham has no parking requirements by ordinance, but they do have market-driven parking requirements.
Exactly. We've proposed a reduction from the presumptive requirement, as Mike alluded to. So we believe that we're not asking to put 50% of what's required. We know there needs to be a meaningful amount. But we think we don't. If you provide it, people will use it. If you don't, there is some argument that you can wean people off, but people will still drive cars, as Jackie said. So we tried to come up with a reasonable amount of reduction to really kind of meet some of the things, which is let's not provide as much parking as we need to, but also not so much that it does become a neighborhood nuisance. So we think we've got a reasonable amount. We've got a mixture of uses that create some internal capture. You know, we think it's reasonable that people will not get out of their car and drive to Harris Teeter. They'll actually walk across there and do their thing. So there is some reasonableness to having a reduction, but it's not to the point where it's half of what's required and it's just a big mess. That wouldn't be a successful project. So it really is pretty much market-driven. The parking requirements come pretty close to this. We're asking for an additional reduction because we just don't think it's necessary.
Okay. Thanks.
Very good point. One other thing before I leave this slide, too, and we'll go to the site plan in a minute, and I won't be repetitive, but notice that the railroad tracks and the railroad spur, and in fact there were coal cars parked down there tonight, as there often are. But look across. We have the Piedmont Health Center across the tracks. We don't have residential across from this site. And also keep in mind that the very large Fitch Lumber storage facility on the other side, Trish, I believe actually has a M1 zoning, a manufacturing zoning district.
Yes.
So, again, keep that in mind. Trish has already talked about that.
Before you leave that slide,
yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out that, and just as you just said, that those large footprints that are shaded in, in contrast to those that aren't, they are commercial, and that their size is to accommodate for commercial, whereas, you know, Carlborough is the most densely populated municipality in North Carolina, and, you know, it would seem to me that, you know, creating a footprint that is equally as large as commercial for residents is not the best coupling. Or maybe you'd want to not bundle those two together because it looks more like a commercial footprint is what I'm trying to say in short.
Understand. Point well taken. Okay, and then finally, I'm going to bring Matt up in a minute, but a couple of things I want to point out are, that we got directly out of the input from the advisory boards and you during our earlier concept plan review. Again, those were to make sure that we accommodate future connections to the properties to the north and the south, which we've done. The design does not preclude emergency vehicle access to Parker Street, and certainly we can articulate that, make that happen when we come back in front of you and show how that would work. Another thing was to make sure that we have adequate area for service and deliveries to the back of the commercial building, which we've done, and adequate facilities for trash handling. Notice we've called out community gardens. One of the things the EAB suggested was that we come up with a good commercial-scale composting facility there, which we thought was an excellent idea that we can incorporate that. Another thing that came out of the review of the Joint Advisory Boards and you folks early on was the original plan had a kind of a ceremonial traffic circle drop-off there, which really was a waste of space for cars. So we've turned that into a community area with green space and plazas and that sort of thing to be able to provide more of a livability for the folks that are going to be living there and working there. And finally, just to reiterate, we have purposely lined up with Shelton Street across, and we have been proactive and shown what we consider our pedestrian and bicycle intersection improvements, particularly to the level that NCDOT will allow us to do on North Greensboro Street where it lines up with Shelton Street. With that, I'd like to bring Matt D'Amico with Design Collective, the architect, up, and he's going to talk a little bit more about the buildings themselves.
All right, well, thanks, Dan, Ken, and thank you, everybody. I'll be brief. I think you've seen some of the sketches I'm going to show you, but what I wanted to point out, what I'm going to show you is this elevation here and this elevation here, and then a perspective as if someone was standing somewhere about in the corner right here looking back towards the two buildings. So that's what you're going to see next. I just wanted to point that out for reference. A couple things I want to add to what Dan talked about. The site slopes down towards the railroad track, so we are able to tuck some parking under the building, which also becomes a place where we think would be great to have the elevator core of the building come down, so there could be some secured spaces for cars, bicycles, and motorcycles, and even storage area for the residents if they're storing, you know, garden equipment or whatever they may have. That provides a great opportunity to create a secured area for those kinds of things to support the residences and the activities that would happen. And the service, I think, did you talk about it? The service is tucked down in this corner way back here where there would be dumpsters, so that trash that comes down from the building would end up coming down at this end, down into the lower area, and then down into the dumpsters here. And service for the retail would happen back here. So we put those in areas that we think begin to work pretty well with the site. This building would have retail or commercial, some type of use, that would front on Greensboro and front right here. And then conceptually, you know, this isn't exactly quite right, but a lobby on this side for elevator core and stair to get to the upper building. And then an elevator core and lobby right here off this building, off this front plaza. Page down, is that right? Okay, so there's the elevation of the building, the building A, which fronts onto, this is the portion of the building that fronts onto Greensboro, and you see the step back that's required as part of the DNP buffer line that is right in there, and then the building would be 35 feet tall, probably about 10 foot or so floor to floor for the residential, and then that allows us to get a much taller floor to floor height on the ground level, so that if there's any, you know, retail, commercial, or restaurant, it has a nice urban scale to it on the ground level. I'm not going to talk a lot about the architecture, but this is very preliminary. We know we have to go through the CUP process and further refinement of the architecture. But just beginning to suggest materials and a fenestration and a massing that's kind of consistent with the historic and mill industrial feel of downtown. This is the elevation of the residential building. And then this is the perspective, as I said, looking at from the corner of Shelton and Greensboro, looking at the building A, retail, commercial, on the ground level, two stories of residential. And you can see the four-story residential building in the back. Is that good?
let me then, I'll be brief also. I know we're running on some long time here, but I want to talk a little bit about some of the benefits, both direct and indirect. When we first started out, again, a few months ago, one of the things that we've tried to do is create a project of a scale that had the ability to, you know, create jobs, create wages, provide this mixture of affordable housing, which I think is consistent with, you know, having different sizes of units, having different price points of units, having different types of features, one bedroom, one bath, two bedroom, two bath, one with a den, things like that, just to meet different folks. We've talked to the community housing with Robert Dowling about potentially relocating some of the existing structures if that's necessary, and then working with him on kind of the parameters under which the affordable housing would be calculated, and we continue to have discussions with that. We're increasing the commercial tax base by having that retail piece in there or commercial piece in there, in addition to providing some tax dollars on the residential piece and making a commitment to working with minority and women business enterprises. We tried to tackle some of the traffic, transit, and transportation issues. Based on the TIA, there's minimal impacts on the North Estes and Weaver Street to the south, I forget. While there is impact directly at the site coming out, we've made accommodations for, you know, two dual lanes, and it's not uncommon, as was mentioned in Trisha's presentation, to have, you know, when, you know, 97% of the traffic flow is north and south on Greensboro, so it's tough to get out, no different than trying to get out at other locations, but we tried to find a way to accommodate that. We've obviously addressed these pedestrian improvements. We talked about site and building designs. A lot of this gets into really the site and building elements that were on that laundry list. They seem to be weighted towards really this building, these areas of efficiency and energy consumption and things like that. But what I try to say is there's other things that I think equate to projects that should allow for the additional density when it comes to affordable housing, the site, and things like that. So we tried to do something consistent with the Downtown Neighborhood Protection District and consistent with the height limitations. Even though we can't prescribe those at this time, we believe the project would be consistent and come out of the CUP process, consistent with what's on the books right today. And the land is adjacent to other B1G and B1C parcels, so it's not like we're leapfrogging over, you know, several other areas to try to get that. So in general, while it may not be perfect at the exact location, in total, there's enough features in there that would say, look, if we can meet all of these things and still prescribe kind of site and building features, you know, this project is something that we would endorse to move forward and allow for the additional density. And what we're proposing is this is the level of density that would fit without kind of damaging all these different pieces. And I know that's up to discussion and try to get the parameters built out. There's indirect benefits of having mixed use and scale, as Dan mentioned, with people being out there, being able to shop and go to the stores and things like that. The diversity of uses and incomes and transportation make for a much more sustainable project. If you were just doing all for sale housing or doing all market rate rental or doing all commercial space, it's very, very difficult. And having this diversity, while it's more complicated to plan, design, develop, construct, and execute, ultimately, long-term, once it's up and running, is a much more, in our opinion, is a much more sustainable way to move forward. That when something's up, something else is down, and you can kind of work through that. And what you have is a continuum activity in the downtown area, which is really what we try to focus on. We try to come up with an efficient design. Having denser development where there's existing infrastructure is better than going to a greenfield site. We tried to work with the existing topography. So there's, a number of different features that lend itself to allow for the, you know, additional density that we're looking for. We're trying to reuse, relocate structures. We're trying to have good access. We're trying to try to improve safety as much as we can with the alignment of Shelton Street, trying to improve the crosswalks, trying to reduce the driveway cuts. So you've got all these things kind of coming in at the same angle, and you've got to balance all these things. And the question then is, you know, has this project checked enough boxes, kind of going back to this checklist or point scoring? I'm not sure how we get there, but are there enough features of a project like this that would allow it to move forward? And we talk about it's a gateway. There's this entranceway. There's the historic neighborhood to the west. There's the transition towards the Harris Teeter. This would be the next logical piece to the park that would create this transition to the residential neighborhood and it's multifamily and some condominiums on the east side of North Greensboro Street. You guys know the team who's here. And this is a summary of where we were and where we are. So I know I went through fast on the features, but I think it's helpful or at least instructive to know that the features kind of drove a little bit of the text amendment conditions, and likewise, we think that the conditions or the features that are in the text amendment would want to drive you to projects that maybe they don't look exactly like this, but this has the features that would be successful from a development perspective, but also many of those are consistent with the downtown vision plan that we work with looking at with the staff.
Okay. Thank you, Ken. Thanks. We're going to take a 4.5-minute recess.
We'll be back in 5 minutes.
And then we'll hear from Patrick McDonough and if anybody else wants to speak. Actually, if you want to sign, if you think that you're...
We were sitting, though, for like 100 minutes, so I think.
Okay, welcome back. I have a number of people signed up to speak. Patrick McDonough first.
First, thanks to the board for the opportunity to speak this evening. My name is Patrick McDonough. I live at 103 Raven Lane. Sometimes you see me before this board as a representative of Triangle Transit. Here I am, here as a citizen, and my comments do not in any way reflect the opinions of my
board. Please don't take it the wrong way that I'm eating peanuts while you're...
Not a problem. Feel free to have a drink with that, too. First, I'm not here to endorse the proposal this evening. I think that there's an opportunity for a good proposal here, but I think the staff has already flagged numerous things that need to be thought about carefully. But a couple things to think about. The ESC voted against it, and I presume it's because it's mostly residential and not enough commercial. I would also like to see more commercial in this project. I think the other question is that if the development team is not bringing forward with more commercial, it might be worth asking if they're doing this because they don't perceive a large enough market in downtown, in which case is the residential part of the stuff that would make the market. So there seems to be a chicken egg potential question that would be interesting to hear them respond to.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw something here, item 3.1 in the packet. Staff made a very excellent item to peruse for today's meeting. I agree with the assessment of the in-screen parking on North Greensboro is a disappointing part of the design. The other thing that concerns me, though, is it talks about encouraging to there's talk about buffering standards. I think one thing that Carrboro has gotten better, and a lot of municipalities in our area, is working on the idea of buffering, which is let us prevent the quantity of interactions between the new stuff and everything else versus interfacing, which is how can we raise the quality of the interactions. I think you guys with Claremont and Winmore, when you put some of those connections there, did a really good job of that. So I would think about not how much can you shield this property if it gets developed, but how can you make the interfaces excellent with the stuff that's next to it. On the traffic side, there's a lot there. I hope the staff will dig into it deeper. I would love to see, if there are any Transportation Board members here, I'm going to high-five you out in the hallway about unbundled parking. That's a terrific idea. Asheville does it, too. There's a building right near the Fine Arts Theater. I don't know the name of it, but they were selling condos and parking for, I think, $13,000 a space in downtown Asheville. Granted, downtown Asheville is physically bigger than Carrboro, but the population is smaller than Chapel Hill and Carrboro combined. Might be something worth looking into that. I think the key there is that if you have people who are, Jackie, you're correct, people are not going to give up their cars, but sometimes a two-car family can become a one-car family. Mm-hmm. The other strategy that you might be able to use in conjunction with unbundling is car sharing. Zipcar estimates that every one Zipcar they place in a development might remove seven cars within a X area radius. Carrboro is probably not dense enough to pull off the car shedding that they do in northeastern cities, but if we could get half that, then maybe you could do the unbundling if the town could figure out the way to work it in the ordinance while avoiding some of the spillover effects that Alderman just is rightly concerned about. On the open space thing, I think open space is a term we want to get away from in downtown. I'd suggest thinking about parks, plazas, and squares and courtyards. One of the things when I see the site plan is we have a problem with screening, and there's an open space that's kind of back for the residents. Could that open space be brought forward to the street so that it, A, screens parking, but also shares the open space with the public as well as the residents and neighbors who might be impacted by the property? I think my final key point here is I took a look at some data in the 2000 census and the 2009 ACS. It's worth noting that Carrboro went from 69% of households below $50,000 a year down to 59%. We added 880 households earning more than $100,000 and had a net loss of 84 households earning under $100,000. And so I think the reason why this deserves consideration and pushing them to improve, and again, I'm not saying you should approve this, I'm saying you should think about it, is that affordable housing is an increasing challenge in this community, and just getting some more units, some of them should be affordable and workforce, and you guys should work hard for that, but even just expanding the supply of the market rate takes the heat off the market appreciation, and I think that would help with some of our housing issues in the area. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this evening. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
Okay. David
Arneson.
Arneson.
Good evening. I'm David Aronson. My wife Sarah and I live at 102 Mulberry Street, which is just a little bit north of this property. In the interest of full disclosure, I should say I'm an architect. I own a small firm in downtown Durham. I've had occasion to work with Dan Jewell on pro bono stuff, both served on the Historic Preservation Commission in downtown Durham. But I don't have any relationship to this project other than just being a concerned citizen of Carborough. I'm here in support of the project. I think there are a number of good points. The economic benefits of it, I think, are a slam dunk. Having 110, 114, whatever it is, residential units, that many people living in a five-minute walk of Harris Teeter and Weaver Street and all the restaurants and Fitch Lumber and these places would be an obvious benefit for the entire community. I think density and designing an urban building like this, mixed use in an urban core, is inherently the most green type of new construction you can do, as opposed to any kind of suburban construction, low density, where you're extending infrastructure, building roads, extending utilities, that kind of thing. We've already got all of that right here. You know, the greenest building out in the suburbs would never compare to an average building in an urban core where it's walkable and dense. We do a lot of work in downtown Durham, and as others have mentioned, we don't have a parking requirement in downtown Durham. And we actually designed a condominium project in downtown Durham a couple of years ago, and about a third of those units didn't have parking spaces. And we sold the units and the parking. You know, you had to pay a premium to get a parking space. And that model seems to have worked just fine in downtown Durham anyway. I think the scale and the size of this project is perfectly appropriate to the area. It seems to me that Carborough could use more density, more mixed-use projects. It's a two-story building on Greensboro Street. I think the size and scale is appropriate where it meets adjacent residential. It doesn't get to the four stories until it's pretty far back. I couldn't quite understand the staff comment about urban vitality, or however it was termed, with a negative by it. It seemed to me that this was clearly going to be an improvement to the vitality of downtown Carborough, to have this many new people living in the neighborhood, patronizing the shops, providing 12,000 square feet of commercial space, so there's new businesses being brought to the area. I think it's a good project. I'm sure there are details that need to get hammered out, and I trust y'all can do it, but I'd encourage the board to support it.
In your condo project in Durham, where people purchase the parking to go along with it, those that don't purchase it, do they not have cars?
Some of them use on-street parking, or they pay for parking through a city lot that's somewhere nearby. And I think some of them don't have cars. I don't know exactly how many.
Okay, so it's a combination of city lots and
on-street parking.
And on-street. Mm-hmm. Here, on-street would be like in somebody's neighborhood or mm-hmm. or in, you know.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of on-street.
Yeah, we don't have that. That's just kind of unaccounted
sure.
for.
Sure.
Maybe Mulberry Street.
Yeah.
Maybe thanks. Mulberry Street.
Yeah. But I'm also not sure what the ratio is here. Was it 10%? Of the bedrooms wouldn't have parking spaces?
10% less than the minimum requirement.
10% less than the minimum requirement.
There'd still be at least one car per unit.
At least one car per unit. Okay. Again, two people living in a unit, one car. Seems reasonable to me anyway.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep.
Thanks.
Jay Parker.
Good evening. My only stake in this is that I'm a business owner in Carborough for 25 years, so I'm a corporate citizen. And I have personal opinions and personal, as a businessman, opinions about the viability, the vitality of this project. But that, after hearing tonight all the complexity of this, that's not really what I want so much to talk about. One of the things that I think is particularly good that's happening here that we should value is that we have a developer who is a citizen of the town, who cares about the town. I've gotten to know him quite well because I'm the chair of the PTA Thrift Shop Board of Directors, and he's working with us on our redevelopment project. So I've seen those facts as true, that he really cares about what's happening with Carver. He wants to continue to live here. He has kids here. Those things matter to him. So it's rare to have, in my experience, it's been rare in Chapel Hill and Carver to have somebody who has that perspective working on a project, especially a sort of potentially transformational project. I also find him to be a person of very high integrity, great vision, and real flexibility in the way he thinks. So I encourage us to continue to work with him on making something good happen. That's my piece.
Thanks, Jim.
Barbara Jesse Black.
Good evening. I'm Barbara Jesse Black. I'm the executive director of the PTA Thrift Shop. And full disclosure, Ken Ryder is the developer on our project. And just to echo what Jay said, that's not my comment, but I'd like to echo what Jay said about Ken's integrity and just the fact that he is a Carver citizen and takes great pains to make sure that the things that are that he's looking at and developing meet Carver needs. What I'm specifically talking about is just two points. One, from the standpoint of someone that's actually running a business in Carrboro and looking at doing a larger scale development. The foot traffic, I think that Ken's project would bring to the thrift shop would be tremendous, not to mention the fact that the fact that we support the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools with our funds, that would help increase our revenue from an operational standpoint, and would continue the vitality on that side of Carrboro. The second piece to that is currently most of my employees do not live in Carrboro because they can't find any place to live in Carrboro, and so the affordable housing piece I think would speak very well to the needs of some of my employees. And those are my two points that I'd like to make. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to make a comment. That I just want to explain to you and also anyone, that's the reason why I'm going to be harping on this workforce housing question is
sure.
The reason your employees can't find housing is not because there isn't rental housing they can afford,
right.
But because it's filled with students.
Right.
So if we're going to build more that's going to fill with students, that's mm-hmm. not going to help your employees. So I do want to
point, sure,
try to
point
ensure
well taken.
In this project that we actually get what you're looking for.
Right. And I think it's also the walkability of it, the fact that, you know, a lot of my employees either carpool or don't drive, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that's beneficial as well. But point well taken.
And could they afford $1,000 a month for two bedrooms?
Most of my employees have families. I have very few employees that are single, that live in a single household, so I would say yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we try very hard to pay a wage that accommodates that.
Thanks,
Barbara. Thank you.
David Ballin.
Well, I'm also speaking to you in two roles, one as a part owner of the property at 500 North Greensboro Street. I'm a partner in Green Equity. I'm also a Carrboro citizen and local business owner in Carrboro who's brought other fine projects to you before. So I want to put this in a little historical context. We came to you to rezone 500 North Greensboro probably a shade over a year ago. And I appreciate the discussion at that time and the tenor of the discussion at that time brought on by Balance Movement Studios wanting to move to this property. And the tenor of the discussion I found quite different than what I'm hearing tonight, and I'm a little disappointed by that. At the time, a year ago, I promised to you when Brian disclosed to all of us at actually the night of the rezoning hearing that he felt unable to move ahead with that development. I said that I would make a personal effort to bring to you a local flavor on this site to see that local business was brought to the site, and I've worked very hard, I have to tell you, to see that that would happen. And I think we have, as far as I can see, a very innovative, almost ideal set of conditions here with somebody who lives in town, who has the vision and financial commitment to do something quite innovative. And for me, from where I sit, to fulfill a lot of what I see when I read Vision 2020, when I see the council here meet, increased density, vitality, economic base, I personally see all of that being met here. I've heard reference tonight to some other projects that were approved, but interestingly have not moved ahead. Ground hasn't been broken on several of the projects mentioned here tonight. I've heard from the developers on this one that financing is lined up, that they're ready to go and would love to go, and I don't hear much that would reinforce them, frankly, for going forward, so I'm very happy to hear that they would go forward. So really all I want to say is that I haven't pursued inquiries and contacts with national chains. I hope that this developer can be supported in moving forward to keep it local, to keep the economy local, to provide a lot of the things they've already outlined. If that can't happen, I just don't know where we're going to go economically in downtown Carrboro. So I would just ask you to consider everything that's been said, to not sort of just nitpick so much with conditions that are more extensive than those you've mandated for other similar downtown projects, so that this project can go ahead and succeed in a reasonable time frame. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. That's all the people I have signed up. I'm just going to jump in and ask a question real quick. Dan, I think you, I think I missed the answer to the question that you asked about what is it, ORMU? What the commercial requirement is for ORMU?
She said 75-20.
So 25% commercial minimum.
Right.
Okay. Well, she's got a hand.
I mean, I guess that answer, so I can give you the recheck the ordinance.
Okay.
It's
good. Okay. Update us.
Yes. I can just tell you.
So that's the office residential mixed use zoning district, which was established, I think, about 2005 or something.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be 2006.
2006. Okay. So the language in that section of the ordinance is that the residential component, so it's a there's a requirement for a residential component in that district, and it shall be at least 50% or half and not more than two-thirds of the gross floor area of the project. If at that time hotel was considered a residential use, hotels and motels were considered a residential use, and that say it was specified that they could not consist of more than one-third of the gross square footage that was being used for residential. That's now been moved, so that section actually isn't applicable. But there was a provision that would allow the residential component to be increased to 90% if there was a dedication of land for providing affordable housing, and there's a specific mechanism that's included in the ordinance. So basically, it's 50 to 66% residential. So that would be either 50%. The base provision is that it would either be 50%. Somewhere between 50% and 34% commercial is the range. It's kind of an odd range.
34 to 50.
I mean, the way it's set up.
Okay.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Good conflict. All right. I'm glad I followed up on that.
Yeah, really.
Especially since I missed the first answer, even. So there's parking issues, there's the traffic issue, there's the percentage of the project that's commercial, and then there's sort of the overall scale of the whether the overall scale of the project is appropriate.
Those are units, yeah.
The number of units, in other words. Those seem to be the four main issues that I was.
There's also,
I have other issues.
I have one more too.
There's also the lack of two entrances. Two very obvious entrances.
One entrance issue. Okay. Lydia, go ahead.
The other question I had, and maybe Ken could address it now or just consider it. I think during the planning board discussion, there was a little bit of a talk about the affordable housing component maybe being less than 80%. I know that was kind of talked about a little. I don't know if you want to address that now or just consider it with further feedback or something.
We'll consider it, but we're open to coming up with some way of reducing the number to kind of hit a broader spectrum of housing.
Okay, and just for the board members, during the planning board discussion, the developer was talking about having that threshold be possibly lower than 85% for the affordable housing component.
Dan.
Okay, first I have a sort of tangential question that anyone could answer. Am I recalling correctly that the CVS store at Carmel, that we've been told it has like the highest business per square foot of any whatever.
Highest volume, right.
I thought of that when we were being told, you know, that we needed people to walk to those businesses. Mm-hmm. Not that more people going there isn't a good thing, but...
we're not morbid.
There's, you know, plenty of business.
It's not all foot traffic, though.
It's not, that's right. Anyway, so a couple issues. I'm concerned about all of the transportation-related issues. So I think it was the traffic, both in terms of the level of service, the turns, and also there was an issue raised about the possible impact on the bike lane that I want to learn more about. I think the question about the screening and the architectural standards need to be laid out very specifically so that we can consider them when this comes back to us. I would like to see, you know, I think if we look at the things we've approved, we see in downtown generally 25% and up in commercial in the various projects. We're going from a building that was approved a year ago that had, I think, 26,000 commercial square footage, and now we're being proposed 12,000. I would really like to see us get back into that ballpark if at all possible. And I am really quite interested in, I mean, I understand the idea that workforce housing means a certain segment of the income scale, but what I want to know is specifically what is it about these units that means that those workers are going to be primarily who's living there, and I'm not even saying entirely, but primarily. Mm-hmm. So those are my additional concerns.
I just want to make sure that some of the recommendations by the Transportation Advisory Board are taken into account, such as their recommendations cover bike parking provided at a rate of one bike per parking space for every two residential units, and then also that the parking lot meet the standards for green parking lots per the EPA Green Parking Lot Resource Guide. And then finally, that given that we've had discussions of a connector, greenway, bike path along the railroad track at some point, to not preclude the option for making a connection there. So in other words, have a bike pedestrian trail easement, kind of where y'all identify that garden along the side of the building parallel to the tracks, so that when the day comes that we decide there may be an option along that track, we won't have, you know, precluded that. If you have a bike path of parallel, we'll have many more options to choose from. I'm also concerned about the density, the ratio of commercial, maybe not even the ratio, but just the fact that one building is missing out on having commercial on the first floor. And given that we are trying to maximize commercial space in downtown, it would be valuable and to further justify high-density walkable, bikeable places within town. And the other thing was I just would encourage developers to look into solar thermal, given that when rolled into mortgages, the return on that investment can be pretty significant. 30-year, 15-year mortgages, you'll pretty much be paying less on that mortgage than what you save on your utility bill.
Mark, I have a few more things.
Oh, sure.
Kind of following on Sammy about the TAB, I would, since we've got the extra time over the summer, I would like, when this comes back for staff comment, to reflect on also the planning board and the EAB recommendations so we can consider those in better context. And let me just say that, like, when I looked at the planning board recommendations this time, you know, I felt like I had to call Damon to discuss them because the way they were laid out, I didn't really understand the context for them and how they fit together. And I don't know if it's possible to do a better job kind of fleshing out some of the advisory board comments sometime, but that's just sort of feedback. I mean, I don't mind calling a board chair and having a conversation.
I think you can listen to them. So you'll get it from the horse, so to speak, not saying that anybody...
Thank you, Joel, but okay. The other thing which I mentioned earlier is I would like to see more specificity on the nature of the proposed green features for this project and suggest that it might be helpful for the developer to meet with the folks who are doing Viridia because I think they did a very good job being clear about what they were proposing in terms of those aspects of the project and conveying the value of them to this board. So they might be able to be of help to you all. That's what I have.
I'm going to jump in for a minute unless there's an objection. I guess, so I think it would be some of those points that y'all just made are ones that they need to kind of contemplate and figure out how they want to address and come back to us. But some of the points, I think it would be more helpful if we can to sort of tell them what our expectations would be, particularly, you know, what. So the proposal is 12,000 square feet of commercial space in Building A, and how many square feet is Building A?
Well, that's one out of three stories.
Okay, so it's like a third of that building, and it's like the other building is like 90,000 square feet of residential. So what you've got proposed is in, you know, a little less than 10% of the project being commercial space right now, and you know, so I don't know that we've ever adopted a specific standard, and I'm not proposing that we do right now, but I guess my thought is that, you know, I look at the two projects that were approved, although, as somebody pointed out, have not actually been built, were like 15% and 26% affordable. The regulation we wrote for us, actually not so different area of downtown was amounted to requiring 34% commercial. I guess I'm thinking something in the middle of that range, you know, that being closer to like 25% would commercial in the project would be a lot more impressive number. I'd love to hear some reaction from y'all on that point. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is just, you know, on the question of the overall scale of the project, you know, I share some concerns about the traffic impacts on Greensboro Street because of the scale of the development. But on the other hand, So the proposal is for 114 units or something. As it stands right now, you look at, can, could you put up, could you take us back to an area map for a second? But if you look at, for example, at Cedar Court Condominiums, which is a quarter of a mile and three properties away, you can see it just at the, that's a perfect map. Just leave that right there.
Okay.
Or you can, if you can just scroll it down, that's great, but whatever. The point I was going to make, that's Cedar Court. That's about half of Cedar Court that you can see at the top there. That's 52 dwelling units of two bedrooms, one and a half bath, 1,000 square feet each, or 1,050 square feet or something each.
I think it's more detailed than that. Let's see if I find it. So I think I can mention more of that.
I just wanted to point out what the scale of Cedar Court is for some comparison, for some context. Mm-hmm. There's, yeah, that could give you a good view of it.
And that impact, its visual impact from the road is minimal,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to point out.
Yeah. So, not to... Without placing a lot of value judgment on it quite yet, I guess what I'm wondering is
if we would approve Cedar Court today.
Well,
I don't know if this board would or not.
Well, if it's going to make level of service F, we might not.
And I want to say one more thing on that question, which is, you know, I hear the concern. I mean, I am concerned about, on the one hand, about the impact, the traffic impact on this intersection. It's an intersection I use all the time, coming from Shelton Street, and it's challenging to turn left out of Shelton Street at present without this development. But on the other hand, I think it's likely that at some point that Fitch property, you know, 10, 20 years on in the future will be redeveloped in some way, the dooryard, in other words, next to this property. This property, whether it's fundamentally Ken Ryder's proposal or some other, you know, it is zoned for, all of that is zoned for fairly intense commercial use right now. There's bound to be significant traffic impacts when all of that happens, whenever it is. And I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that nobody on this board thinks that the solution would be to have a four-lane Greensboro Street. So, you know, I mean, there's little sort of tweaking and nibbling around the edge of the traffic issue that the applicant can do, and we should look at some of these issues about left turn lane and that kind of thing. But look, the reality is, you know, the traffic situation, the only thing that will make the traffic situation get better on Greensboro Street is for gas prices to continue to spiral out of control, you know. And
we know that's going to happen.
Well, it probably will, but I don't think we can necessarily entirely count on it. But my basic point being, you know, there's bound to be a traffic impact. You're looking at, there's a good like 5 acres of land or there amongst all of it that at some point is going to be something else. And whatever that something else is, I guarantee you, it's, unless it's a cemetery, it's going to have a, you know, significant traffic impact on Greensboro Street, and I, you know, we may need to just kind of accept that reality. So if I would love to hear from people about what scale do they, if people, to the extent that members of the board aren't comfortable with the, you know, 114 units or whatever on this site, what would it need to look more like? And then also, what do they think about percentage of commercial?
I'm glad you raised it that just that way because, you know, I'm glad David brought up the Balance Movement project from last year because I really like that project. I like the way, not only the way it felt, but the kind of commercial that it was and the kind of commercial center it was creating. One of the things being on the Economic Sustainability Commission that I've noticed over the past couple of years is not only are there folks here who want to expand their business and do not have places to expand to, as was Brian's problem initially, but there are other folks currently who have that problem. And in addition to that, folks who come to Carrboro who are seeking, and I've had three people in the last year who've come to me because I'm liaison to that commission, looking to have office space in Carrboro and do not have it and go elsewhere, going to Hillsboro, going to Durham, going, you know. And so in terms of scale, for me, I mean, even if that A building were all commercial, that would be contributing to, you know, the greater commercial density. We talk about increasing the density. The density we really want to increase is the commercial because that's the revenue we need. We need that revenue to support the infrastructure for the people who live here. I think it's, you know, yeah, I believe that having density in housing is important, but if you don't have the money, you know, to support the infrastructure, you've got a problem. And some of you may know that last week we were talking about commercial wrapping of the buses in order to be able to keep our buses free. And that's a direct service to people who won't have cars. So, I mean, it's, you know, you have to be thinking. You want to pile in more people. You have to have the services to support the people. And if the municipality is struggling with the budget, you know, one of the places that you want to infuse that money is at the commercial side. And when businesses can't maintain and they can't expand and new business can't come in because there isn't commercial space, then that has to be our priority.
I'll go after Joel.
That's fine. You know, I'm listening to the conversation. Oh, I'm sorry. I know I'm loud enough, but
I can hear you.
Yeah. I'm listening to the conversation, and the one thing that I don't hear, and, one thing I want from staff, and you actually can send me the tape because I'll probably listen to it or send it to me electronically, just the conversation the ESC had about why they voted against it, because I'd be somewhat curious to know why. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is we know we're in what I consider to be an economically challenged climate at the moment. And so the question is, you know, do we approve projects that we think can be built?
That we think?
That they can be actually be built.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, CUPs, I think they expire in 2 years or whatever, 2 years. And so there's not this big pot of money where everybody's trying to come in. And I'm not suggesting that we sell our souls to get projects, and I'm not suggesting this project is soulless, but so that you won't, you know, go
out.
Like
both sides there. Yeah.
Well, no, it's
no,
just,
no, I mean, you did.
It happens on occasion. I'm trying to limit that as I get older. So I'm in my mind, I'm thinking that I do want more commercial. I will say that. I'm pretty firm on the idea that I would like to see more commercial on that property. You know, with regards to the thing about student housing, almost everybody on this board has been a student. And some of us have people that we hope are going to be college students one day, soon, 5-6 years. And the question is, if you provide another place for students to go, will it or will it not take the burden off some of the neighborhoods where you have rental housing? And I don't know the answer to that question. And staff may want to provide some insight to that if they can at the September meeting. I don't know. I think those are pretty much, you know, my comments.
I love students. I work with students. I have a lot in my family. They're like water, you know. They go where there's the least resistance in housing. So I think just because we create a new pond doesn't mean they're going to leave the old pond. It just means they're going to flow into the new pond. And I'm not against providing students with housing. I just think we need to figure out, you know, who the audience is. I'm not opposed to development on that. I think that it could be transformative and transitional. That is a traditional area that it's in, and it has traditions that many of us value and many of us cherish. There are many, many people who have spent their lives building this community, so that we are providing the benefits to new developments when it comes to parks and schools and transportation. We have paid for those for many, many years. So there are benefits that we offer to people that are moving here. We do have a vibrant downtown that is attracting people. I like the horseshoe design, actually, with a little bit of doesn't have to look like downtown New York, but like some of the commercial up front, but a horseshoe that is perhaps looks more like row houses with commercial on one level and residential on the top two, so that it has a more traditional look to it. Not every new building here has to look like Carmel Mall. And I think maybe if you can pick up one. I say I like Cedar Court. I'm not saying redo Cedar Court, but I kind of like the layout of that, because it lessens the really dramatic impact on a very important section of downtown. It is the gateway. And we're not necessarily interested in completely changing the look of our gateway, those of us that have spent our lives here. Maybe that's not what we want. We might want to enhance it. But, you know, this isn't Detroit. It's not Durham. It's Carrboro. And that's what we value, how we want it to look. So new projects should fit in with that. They don't have to look like Carmel, but, you know, something that looks like row houses. 114 units, that's too much. You know, that's just too, it's too much. So I'll stop with that. As it stands now, I think it would just overly dominate downtown.
I did have one point that no one brings up. And while it is, the back of that project is on the back of Piedmont, if you look at that picture, people who live on Lloyd Street can see the back of that. And so I'm interested in, I'm not expecting a pristine view, but I'm not expecting
the backside. Yeah.
You know, the backside, not with just
the dumpsters.
Exactly, the dumpsters. And, you know, it might be better to put the dumpster in the corner next to the storage area of Fitch. So I'm just saying that as a something for people to think about. I mean, I have to look pristine. And I'm going to have to disagree with you in some form. I kind of like the Carmel look. I'm not really that much into the row house thing. And that just could be because different architectural...
Different aesthetics?
Aesthetics.
That's fine.
You know,
so. I still like you.
Well, I still like you too.
We'll be lucky if we get down to just aesthetic issues.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I like the project. It's obvious to me that a lot of time and effort and considerations have been given to it. There are a few, there are, you know, several problems with it that have been raised tonight that I think need to be addressed. But I think my main concerns with it are two. Number one is I do agree there ought to be a little more commercial, but I'm not against the density that's there, the residential density that's there. I mean, I think it's situated properly. It's in an area in the back that slopes and has parking, and it'll, as has been explained by many folks, provide us with a lot of people that will live downtown, shop downtown, walk around downtown. And it properly, I think, places the commercial out on the road. So I like the placement of those features. But the second part of it that is important to me is this, as we talked about, this workforce housing and how to price these residences so that we can try to hit this group of folks that are maybe at 65 to 85 percent median income, because I think that's certainly another area of affordable housing that we're striving to hit, and I think it would be important to try to do that with this project. Other concerns like traffic and so on are very legitimate and need to be explored, but overall, I really like the project.
Can I just add one more thing? It sounds like there's a lot of expression by the board and the need for commercial on the space, and I don't know to what extent y'all can adjust to that, but if you can, I would recommend also think about the fact that this is along the railroad track, and if gas prices do rise, the value of the rail will increase, and to make whatever commercial space you may be able to do on the bottom floor flexible enough that it may someday be retrofitted to allow for use of the rail, whether it be for storage or, I don't know, whatever. But it's like in the heart, and Carver's got a historical connection to rail anyway. But to maintain that versatility would be valuable if you are going to be responsive to that pretty significant concern of the board's.
Mr. Mayor, just one point of emphasis that that Trish mentioned, and that is that the diagrams and the renderings or the elevations that you saw are not part of the application, really, other than to say that's what maybe what's in their head, but it's not, as opposed to the concept plan, which is right. Part of and referenced in it. So I just wanted to make sure you all are.
So the elevations are just sort of illustrative of possibilities.
What may occur,
right.
Or may
right.
Not.
Mark, when you were talking about having some discussion of scale and recommendations from the board, are you looking for us to be able to direct staff with some specifics?
I just meant as far as feedback to the developer. I mean, I think he's bound to sort of walk away from this meeting sort of contemplating where he wants to go with this thing, and to the extent that we can. Yeah, I don't know whether we as a board are at a point where we could, be that specific. It sounds like maybe not.
But certainly, I mean, if the developer is going to go back between now and September and look at the plans, if we're able to say, to the developer, as I said, well, even if you could look at the front building A being commercial, is that possible? Is that the kind of thing that we would prefer? Could or would propose?
Well, I mean, if that's what people are interested in, then yeah. I mean, that's one of the most obvious things that comes to my mind is, well, what if that front 36,000 or whatever 35,000 square foot building was all commercial? Then their back building, if it stayed as proposed, would be 90 units. There would be 90 dwelling units instead of 114. It'd be somewhat over a quarter of the development. It would be like 26-27% of the development would be commercial, which would be more in line with what we've approved in the recent past. That it's a little bit contrary to some of the points that Sammy was making about the possibility of commercial being in the back building, but that's a possibility that kind of appeals to me, but I mean, I think if more specific than we can be, then probably the more helpful it is.
You'd be willing to an idea you'd be willing to entertain? Or?
Come on.
If I can comment. First, I appreciate everyone's comments, because it really is helpful trying to get to a project that everyone likes, which is really ultimately what we're trying to do. We think it's a unique location. But to give you an example of how we think when we're hearing all this stuff and we're taking notes, so more commercial means typically more parking. More parking takes up more space, which then drives into maybe less units to support the residential or the affordability. So it's this constant balancing act of trying to figure out, you know, if that front building was all commercial, what are the associated, I mean, the traffic impacts will be the same. You know, literally almost adding one or two units of housing creates level of service F at a common driveway. So there's just so much traffic on North Greensboro going back and forth, very little minimal development causes level of service F. So to Mark's point and others, which is there's traffic that needs to be mitigated, and we all need to come up with what's that balance. Is it taking out bike lanes or not? Is it putting in turn lanes? But then you have right-of-way impacts. So there's all these things that need to be balanced. So getting feedback about, look, if the front building were all commercial, two or three stories, is there a different footprint? Is there a different layout of maybe the residential? Is there ability to maybe tuck more parking underneath the back of the building? Right now we only have half of it. There's a lot of moving pieces, and ultimately there's the financial ramifications of that. There are lenders and investors and the time that our, you know, consultants are all working on that really need to kind of be blended together. So, you know, all of this stuff is great to help us kind of figure out which direction to go. And that's kind of what, when we hear all these things, that's, you know, as soon as someone says, well, more commercial, that'd be great. I think there's, you know, it'd be great to have more commercial in the front building, but right now our assessment in the marketplace is that, one, it probably would not be successful today, the way we look at it. And then the other one is we have to provide more parking in general. And if we provide more parking, that leaves less parking for the other uses, which means now we're fighting against our affordability guidelines because we can't do as many units of affordable. Is that okay? And you have to get to that balancing. That's the guidance we're looking for from the board, just trying to figure out, you know, what are those balancing pieces. And at some point, there may be a project that just doesn't work, and we just can't get to that balancing point. But we think we've proposed something that tries to balance all these things. It may be too big, or it may not be exactly what some people would like, but that's the culmination of our kind of collective, you know, experience trying to come up with the plan that we have.
Thanks. I think one point that Mark made is basically like this is a downtown development that commercial residential is going to always have that issue on Greensboro Road. So what we're up against is being creative about how to get around that, however it may be. And I don't know to what extent, because it still leads into Greensboro Street, but Parker Street, you know, if it could be a means for access or egress. But also I'm thinking of Shelton Extended, and obviously it's always an issue to cross the railroad tracks, but to consider that option too, to connect down here, you know, and that would mean changing the whole layout of the building.
You mean connecting to Lloyd Street?
To Lloyd Street. Yeah.
Then you need to bring those residents and those neighbors.
Yeah, and that's probably not going to happen because of the railroad track issues. I'm just putting it on the table as an option. But I think a more viable option may be thinking of the new parking deck that is going to be built at Main Street. Or what is the one we just approved?
Yeah, 300 East.
300 East Main Street. And in consideration of the fact that we don't have on-street parking, but the model that Durham has where they do provide some off-site parking and maybe negotiating some kind of parking with that lot as a possibility for offsetting the increased parking that you may need to have for commercial to justify either because of our ordinance or because it's the market-driven option that would be viable.
I don't know where their parking is. But
there's plenty of parking at Greenwich.
I have Ken, I had one other question. So you kind of alluded to the fact that the assessment was that additional commercial may not be successful. How are you taking the pulse of that? Because I know that you know, I was approached last year, we were approached, the town was approached, with folks interested in creating business accelerators, and they didn't have the right space for it. And so at least one of those, the two business accelerators are up in Hillsboro. When the folks themselves actually live in Carrboro and want to be here, just like you do. So how do you take the read on that kind of information?
I mean, it's mostly driven by kind of market information and what's available space and what might those rates might be and what's the cost to actually site develop this and provide all the different pieces. So it, I just don't know exactly if we could lease another 12 to 24,000 square feet of office space. That's a significant chunk. I don't have a full assessment of exactly a full assessment of what's out there right now, but there are probably at the price point that we would need to, based on the additional site development, might price it out of the market of what's out there. Not that there wouldn't be people interested, but in order to kind of make all the pieces work, because we're maybe not getting as much revenue or cash flow from the affordable piece, which we all want to do, you know, the other pieces maybe get less affordable, whether it's residential or commercial space. So I'm not saying there aren't users out there. And it is a little bit more complicated to have a mixture of uses. What I would really think would be difficult to execute is something that had retail and commercial and residential. There's inefficiencies, a lot of inefficiencies in building design and security issues and things like that that make it difficult to execute. It's easy to draw on a piece of paper. It's very difficult to actually execute successfully. I think that's the reason for some of the existing projects having difficulty getting under construction. It's just difficult to finance also. I mean, there's just the reality of where the lending market is these days.
But if we said okay to all these projects that where people don't want to be doing the commercial or the office, then we could very quickly fill most of the vacant lots in downtown Carrboro with all residential projects. And we're not willing to go there. We're worth more than that. That's not who we are. We're not about to turn into, you know, a huge apartment complex. That's not who we are. It's not our tradition. It's not why we went through this long process of changing the density bonuses downtown. But we could very easily have every project that's not coming off the ground turn into to 90% apartments. And so if we do it for one, then what is our argument against doing it for all of them? And then who are we? Where are we? We don't even look like us. So that's one of the arguments against density, is that you have to be fair and you have to make those decisions across the board, and you have to look at the gates that you're opening when you do that.
Let me just we have actually a couple other items on our agenda. We need to wrap this up. But I wanted to just throw the thought out there that, and this is why I wanted to get to this public hearing in order to comment on the last one, because I feel like the text amendment that we held a public hearing on, you know, is sort of one approach to how some project like this could happen on this site. But I have to believe that, or be my guess anyway, that there must be some other zoning districts that this the entire property could be rezoned to that would allow this project or something like it, some version of this project to happen, but which rezoning doesn't have the same kind of like, well, what effect does this change have on other parts of our downtown? You know, like the solution that you proposed in the text amendment is very, it could potentially apply in lots of other places, and it's maybe just a little bit too much for us to think about all of the implications of that text amendment where, you know, I just would be my guess that, you know, B1C or anyway, that there must be some zoning designation out there that would allow for for a project that's similar to this. And it just seems to me that that might be kind of a cleaner and simpler way to approach this, so that we're not having to worry about the implications of what we're doing as far as the other side of town. And instead, what we're dealing with is this site and the issues that relate to it.
Except if you had a permit on something that had been granted a couple years ago that required you to have 25-35% commercial in the downtown in order to get the residential that you wanted, and then somebody else comes up a couple blocks away and they get to only do 10%, wouldn't you be a little miffed?
Absolutely. I'm not trying to address that point. I'm trying to get at that. I think the biggest problem, I'm looking back at the text amendment and the issues in the previous public hearing, and just saying, the text amendment doesn't seem like a solution to some much broader problem that I'm not sure the Board of Aldermen has entirely decided that we
need to solve.
Exactly, in order to deal with this, to
give a specific example, if memory serves, the scale of the Butler, although it's a very different type of property, the amount of the building is very similar to what is proposed here in terms of the amount of residential.
The scale.
Not the scale, exactly. And I don't recall what the zoning was there, but so I think there is zoning that can accommodate that kind of scale.
And I'm just wondering whether that isn't a sort of, for the purposes of this particular property, whether that isn't just a simpler approach to dealing with.
Ken, did you consider looking at another zone?
You can tell the answer to that question in September.
Okay. Yeah.
good idea.
But I just, so I don't want to get into it. I just want to say I want y'all to think about that and explore whether that's a, whether that might be a simpler way to deal with this. And then the one other thing that I want to emphasize is, and this relates to both Lydia's point and David Ballin's earlier, that, you know, I mean, we've taken a very critical tone toward a number of aspects of this project, which might give somebody the wrong idea, at least from my perspective, about what I kind of think about the proposal as a whole. I think it still clearly has issues that we've got to resolve, but I think it's impressive that, you know, this is basically right across from my neighborhood. I'm on the listserv. I'm a part of the Facebook group for my neighborhood. We're chit-chatting away about development issues all over the place, or I'm not really, but they are. I see it all about development issues that relate to downtown Carrboro and the areas around my neighborhood. There's nothing about this project, and it's not because nobody knows about it. It's because there's not a lot of objections to it. People are not that concerned. I think that speaks well to the direction that you're headed with the project, Ken. And we didn't, likewise, at our public hearing tonight, you know, there were some questions raised, but nobody's saying that the whole thing is ill-conceived or something. I didn't attend the community information meeting that happened several months ago for this project, but I did breeze by and kind of listen in for a minute. And the tenor of that meeting was actually very similar to this public hearing in terms of what we heard from the members of the public. There were a number of people from my neighborhood who were there and who were interested in hearing about the project, and they had questions, but it wasn't there, you know, there were no torches and pitchforks. Anyway, so I'm hopeful that you'll kind of bear with us a bit and kind of stick with this process for a little bit, and hopefully we'll figure out a project that works for Carrboro and for your bankers.
Appreciate your feedback.
All right. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Thanks, Ken.
All right.
Do we need to continue the public hearing?
I think that's an appropriate motion.
I move that we continue the public hearing until September.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we continue to September. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
And we can have the same discussion all over again. And you won't have to be here. You'll be like trout fishing or something.
No,
I have a new suggestion on the human services matter that very briefly.
Okay.
Which is this. I would like to suggest that if the board is sufficiently concerned about this issue that we simply refer the recommendations back to the Human Services Advisory Board with a request that they take another look at this issue and maybe meet like next week or something, and which I realize would be a special meeting for them, and then hear their responses, because I'm reluctant to kind of.
I don't want to mess with their.
Yeah,
work.
It just sets such a precedent for future years. You know, then everybody's going to start saying, "Oh, we've got to lobby the Board of Aldermen."
Or they're going to say, "I'm not going to bother to be on this if the board's making
right.
the decision."
Well, right. Anyway, yeah.
I'd like to make a comment.
I want to say something, because I think I really want to object to that characterization, because I think, you know, in the six budgets I've looked at, there have been, what, well over 200 recommendations of particular funding. And for us, as an oversight body responsible for this, for there to be one question that arises out of 200-some-odd proposed fundings, I just don't think it's reasonable that someone should want to rethink their service based on that, or think that this board is in the business of second-guessing those recommendations. I am not. I've been in the position that they're in. I know the work that's gone into it. I just am concerned. I think there's a precedent about organizations that we funded consistently for a certain amount. I think there are issues this board needs to talk about as a matter of policy. Do we want to be reducing, and by how much, organizations that count on us? But anyway, I'm fine with Mark's suggestion that, you know, to refer back. It's my concern.
I'm fine with the suggestion, but I want to say that it appears that it would be undermining it. And even if you characterize it like that, because they spend a considerable amount of time on Mondays for 3 hours, and people come in and they present their budgets and they ask them cogent questions about why they do things. The other thing is, quite frankly, I would ask staff to see if they could find another $3,500 in our budget. And I know that's, normally I wouldn't ask you that. But I think it is really critical funding for some of these other smaller institutions. And more importantly, we shouldn't follow Orange County's method, because they reduced their entire amount by 12%. 12%. So I don't want to follow Orange County in that respect, in any way whatsoever.
I think Orange County.
I'd like to put a little drop in the bucket here and see if we can move this along. I think the first question is, and we are, as a board, or as a commission rather, we make recommendations to the board, and it is up to you people to decide. And if you, as a board of aldermen, decide that you do not want to reduce the IFC's a portion and would like to see them get the other $33,550, that's one decision, and it's perfectly legitimate for you to make that decision. Because we are offering recommendations. I would, however, if you should decide that at this time or some other time, recommend that the $3,550 shortfall, which would be spread out, not taken from the seven new organizations who are applying. There are 31 other organizations that we have awarded $2,000 plus to. And for that's my count, just sitting there. 31 into 35.50 goes to something like $113.
Right.
So if you took that, and somebody else can check the math, but if you took that amount off each one of those allocations, nobody would miss it that much.
Yeah.
So it first decision is, do you want to see that the IFC gets that $35.50? And if you do, I recommend, as I just said, spreading that $35.50 over the 31 organizations. $2,000.
I think that makes sense, and given that y'all have already met for the last time, to ask you to convene again, and when this, to me, makes a lot of sense.
And it might not be workable. All people might not be available at this point.
Right. So I'm in favor of that.
Yeah. All right, I take that as a motion. Yeah.
Well, we already have a motion on that.
I'll second.
We have Jack's motion on the floor. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Joel seconded
it. So is this a friendly amendment to it?
I'm going to have Jackie.
Yeah, and so the amendment would be...
To reduce
do you have what Audrey said?
Yeah, that we restore the funding to IFC and the groups that have more than 2,000.
But IFC takes the same percentage decrease as everybody
else.
That's
right.
Yes, that's right. I agree with that.
And that we so it would be a little bit less than the 100 and something. Yeah, okay.
I could live with that. But I also would say this, that if you're going to start doing that, then there might be an expectation that other people can lobby the board, and I use the word lobby the way I mean it. Lobby the board to change the recommendations. And if you want it,
but no one lobbied the board tonight.
Right.
Well, I think that's that is an important point to point out to the public. No one lobbied for this, and we're not going to listen to lobbying in the future. We're not listening to it now, and we won't listen to it in the future on these funding
issues.
Well,
I think more importantly, we make a firm that, you know, we're not looking to reduce contributions to
the
board.
Jackie, would you be willing to have that be, you said that is, you're willing to have that amendment.
And I'll second that.
Okay. With our thanks to the Human Services Advisory Board for all their hard work and
Absolutely.
This lady for their leadership.
Thank you.
I hope you didn't have that answer before it actually took you the whole meeting to come up with that idea.
It's good we kept you here.
No, she had about
half hour.
Well, you had me trapped here and I had to stay awake. So I'm
sorry.
Nice civics lesson for you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passed unanimously. Is there a motion for the vehicle financing proposal?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passed unanimously.
I would like to move the resolution that Lydia put in front of us regarding the YMCA
market. Second.
All right. The resolution has been moved and seconded. Do you want to say something in 30 seconds or less?
30 seconds or less. I meant to get this out this week if I can, because the Y is going to discuss it next week. And you can see here that it has to do with a possible merger with the Y of the Triangle, and that would maybe influence some of the policies that our local Y has with regard to discrimination.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Could I have a motion for the resolution that Lydia and I were circulating regarding that Lydia wrote, regarding
Some
Her
HB 910 order
by
mayor, insurance, municipal insurance coverage for reproductive services. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. That motion was from Dan.
No, it's either from me, seconded by Jackie, or
the other way around.
Yeah, one of us.
Okay.
We all jumped in.
Is there a motion adjourned?
So moved.
All in favor, see you both. Opposed. That's my understanding.